Welcome back. I got here with me Fred and Tom. Welcome back, guys. You guys having a good weekend? A lot of boxing to watch. A lot of boxing for you guys to pretend you watched.
A lot of quantity.
I mean, I've been talking about this for months now. All this new boxing, not a good idea. All this TV time, not a good idea. And we're starting to see it with like some matchups that just are not that great. But hey, I mean, if you like boxing, you know, you have a lot to choose from, and no one's telling you that you have to watch every single thing. This is the Sunday Puncher Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have listened for a while, thank you. Subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. Let's get into it. Amir Khan faced Billy Dib on Friday. We're not going to talk about that, though. We're going to talk about Rob Brant, who fought before in the morning. He fought Ryota Murata. He went all the way to Japan to face Ryota Murata. A rematch of what was a really action-packed fight first time around. Rob Brant came with his all-action style, and Ryota Murata just got the hell beaten out of him. And so, you know, heading into that fight, we were like, oh, why is Tom picking Rob Brant? Why is Tom acting like Rob Brant is like a threat at middleweight? Tom was just all over Rob Brant, and I was just like, look, Ryota Murata isn't good, so, you know, it doesn't matter either way if Rob Brant wins or not. But Rob Brant did already lose to Jürgen Bramer, so that says enough about what we need to hear about Rob Brant. And then Brant beat Murata, so Tom comes on here gloating, acting like he knows what's up, acting like he's, you know, Jimmy the Greek or something. And then they rematch. And Tom, why don't you just break down what we saw?
Sure. It's very interesting and surprising results. I mean, credit to Murata, you know, great game plan, gutsy game plan. You know, he came out and really put it all on the line. I mean, he bet everything on an early knockout. He was throwing at an unsustainable pace. He literally set CompuBox records for the number of power punches thrown and landed. And, you know, he was able to hurt Brant. I mean, Brant had not really shown a weak chin in his career. And, Murata, I guess probably despite the amount of punches he was hit with in the first fight, went in with the attitude, he's not really going to hurt me. I'm going to go in and try to hurt him early. He did, and he closed the show. And, you know, all the credit to him. On Brant's side, the fight this reminded me of was Castillo Corrales 2. The first, it may seem like a weird pull, but the first fight between Castillo and Corrales was a phone booth fight. You know, they were slugging it out. And the second fight, Corrales kind of came out like, okay, let's get back in that phone booth. And Castillo, you know, there were lots of other issues in that fight with like problems with, you know, Castillo not making weight. But, you know, he stood at a distance and just landed. You know, he didn't fall into that trap again. Landed powerful shots and ended it. And this fight kind of seemed like Brant just sort of felt like it was going to play out like the first time. He just went out there throwing a million punches. And anytime you throw a lot of punches, you open yourself up for counter shots. And, you know, you open up for your opponent's offense. And, yeah, did it not work out well for him. I mean, he just went out there throwing a million punches. Murata really committed to throw powerful punches, hurt him, stopped him. Yeah, that's how it played out. I hope Brant got paid, because it could be a long road back for him.
I mean, Fred, you got a response to that?
No, this is old Tom shame. He's gonna carry this burden forever. Rob Brant love.
I don't know, it's
different. Okay, one thing I didn't see on Vada's testing site: congratulations, Murata, for completing their program for the third time. So, you know, that's what you get. You go to Japan, no testing. Suddenly the guy's got his partner back.
Look, I don't really want to get onto this conspiracy theory kick, but for years, we've seen plenty of Japanese fighters fight most of their careers over in Japan. And then they come over here to Kashimura and they get pummeled. You have a guy like Takashi Uchiyama, never left Japan. You got a guy like Shinsuke Nakamura, Just kidding. Shinsuke Yamanaka, God left, staying over there for years, never coming over here. And now I'm not saying that those guys are dirty, because I love both of those fighters. Actually, I love all three of those fighters that I mentioned. Yamanaka, Uchiyama, Miura, love them. But, I mean, is there smoke to this fire? How does a guy like Ryota Murata look absolutely pathetic in his fight with Rob Brandt first time around, and this time around, this guy looks like Gennady Golovkin? Someone speak to me.
Well, look, I'm just going to jump in quickly. He looked like Gennady Golovkin for better or worse. He also got tagged up a lot. I mean, his face looked like he had taken six rounds of punishment after two rounds, you know? I mean, he really forced the issue. I mean, he you know, he said, someone's going to get knocked out. It's going to be, he was fighting for his career. I mean, you know, noted Fred talking about the VADA site. I mean, I can't claim to have researched that in any way, but, you know, that's what Murata did, and he succeeded. You know, his career would not have looked too bright if he had come away with a third loss on his record here. So, credit to him.
Toshiyoshi Nishioka. What happened to him when he came here?
Yeah, I actually, can you explain that one for me? That's too deep of a drop for me.
Toshiyoshi Nishioka.
Who did he fight?
I mean, dude, this is like the worst way to start the podcast. Just name dropping random Japanese fighters. But Nishioka was like a force at 118, I believe, maybe even 115 for a while. Either way, I don't think it's important. Dude had a great fight with Rafael Marquez. And then, I mean, he was just like blazing fast, just super fast fighter, good power, comes here and got beat on the, I believe, Rios Alvarado. The first fight, that was the undercard for the main event, which was Donaire versus Nishioka. And, Nishioka came to the ring to that like funky jazz hip hop sort of song from the 90s. I forgot what it's called, but strange fight. Anyway, we should probably not talk about this anymore. We should talk about Ryota Murata. So it's the score is 1-1. Is it likely that Top Rank does a rematch? Because we, you know, that's kind of like, there are things that every promoter is synonymous with, and I think that it's pretty common knowledge that Top Rank's one of their gimmicks is that they do rematches. So we've got Murata Brandt 2. Do we get a third one, Fred?
Why? I don't think so. It depends who's got the rights to this guy.
When has why ever been a relevant question that they asked?
Yeah, but I don't know. Is there going to be any interest?
Was there any interest
in this fight. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's no interest in this fight.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of
in Japan, man.
Kind of hogging the hair time here a little bit, but I'll jump in quickly. I mean, there's some interesting business factors here. Like, coming into the first fight, Murata was the Top Rank fighter. They had like the U.S. part of his promotional pact, and they did the fight in America to try to build interest in a Golovkin fight. Murata loses. Great. That kind of falls apart. Brandt, you know, gets a fight in. But, you know, some people seem to be confused after the fight, thinking that, like, Brandt was the Top Rank guy. I mean, not really. They had, as far as I know, a co-promote on him as a result of the first Murata fight. So I think the most likely thing is either Murata goes back to Japan and just does Japan things, because people keep talking about how huge of a star he is there. I mean, to me, that didn't look like the biggest room, and it wasn't sold out. So I don't know, but apparently does huge numbers on Japanese TV.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard that too. I don't. It's hard to know if that's what the reality of that is.
You see that on everything. There was an 8,000 seat, you know, stadium. That's where he fought this. So that's not exactly the Tokyo.
Oh, that was 8,000.
Yeah.
So again, yeah, not.
Look at this guy with the deep knowledge of Japanese venues.
Well, that's why I make fun of the weebs. They're posers.
Wow. Okay. Chill.
Well, anyway, yeah. So then the other thing, which would require a lot of political hoops to be jumped through, you'd think there would still be interest in a Golovkin fight potentially. I mean, Golovkin's career is all over the place. Canelo is leading him around. DAZN has a footprint in Japan, so you know. I don't know what pieces would need to fall into place. I mean, Murata seems to have a big TV deal in Japan, so maybe that would be, you know, a barrier to doing that fight. But Golovkin versus Murata fight in Japan probably makes sense, again, outside of the sort of political issues. Like, that could actually be a draw and make sense for both guys. But a lot of bureaucratic issues that have to get resolved.
Ain't nobody getting no big checks over there, though.
Well, DAZN's not going to pay Golovkin to go fight in Japan.
It's the reason why Josh was probably not going to get the rematch with Andy Ruiz in the UK, because, look, at the end of the day, I think while they have a hold in various countries, you know, Germany and Japan are very strong markets for these guys, I think they see the US as super key because, you know, the NFL streaming rights are coming up. And they clearly want to be players there. So.
Good luck.
Look, I didn't say that they were going to pull it off. I'm just saying, like, establishing some stronghold here. And look, we're getting ahead of ourselves here because look at us. This is ridiculous, okay? We're talking about Golovkin fighting potentially Ryota Murata. And we've transitioned this. And when I say we, I mean me. But the NFL streaming rights do not, like, I think maybe this is a fault of DAZN's, is that they think that winning the ability to televise Golovkin fighting Rob Brent here in America is any indication or any sort of evidence that they could get the NFL streaming rights deal. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem likely, you know. Apple's just going to come with a ton of money. Amazon's going to come with a ton of money. And DAZN's going to be standing there with Golovkin versus Murata. At 5 a.m. Seriously, it's 5 a.m. for us on the West Coast if you want to watch this Ryota Murata fight.
Yeah, sorry to extend this tangent further, but I have a vision of HBO's Final Card, which was one of their lowest rated in their history. Just imagining if Murata versus Golovkin is the sign-off fight for days in boxing.
Oh, I think they still got a long way to go. I wouldn't say that. But
sure.
I mean, if there is a fight to like end your network on that is both really bad but also like features names, like you can't really do too much better than that.
Yeah. I'm ready to move on. I've done enough to derail things.
Good. Let's move on. Well, actually, let's just real quickly, like if Murata doesn't get that rematch with Rob Brandt, and I think that they'll do it. I really do. I think it's 1-1. They got to find somewhere that's a common ground because Brandt beat him in his hometown. Murata beat him in his hometown. Where do they do the next fight?
I don't know. I mean, here would be a place to drop a joke, but I just, please no. Like, we don't need that.
I mean, would you rather see Ryota Murata? Saudi Arabia is, you know, a good.
Spoiler alert. I probably won't watch Murata's next fight. I think it's unlikely they will come up with that.
Wow, Mike Coppinger here, breaking news. But would you rather watch Murata fight Jeff Horn?
Oh, now you're getting me excited.
Oh, Tom's got a little chubby there.
Boxrec's top ranked middleweights and Jeff Horn.
But that is what's next.
I hope that'd be a good one.
Why?
These are both kind of garbage.
Everybody in here laughing for a reason.
Number five middleweight, Jeff Horn.
Yeah, he's higher than Steve Rolls.
I mean, look, what Top Rank is doing is really interesting, and the fact that they're getting away with it is the far more fascinating story here, and also kind of interesting that the mainstream media, the mainstream boxing media, the mainstream media doesn't give a damn about this, but the boxing media doesn't really report on the fact that Top Rank just basically makes up weight classes. Like, and they just toss guys into weight classes, and nobody really says anything. Like, Jeff Horn's a middleweight? Are you sure?
What does that have to do with Top Rank?
Because these are all Top Rank fights. Top Rank is just, like, they just do whatever they want, and no one really bats an eye.
They don't give a fuck.
True. Anyway, we can move on. Jamal James fought Antonio DeMarco. I thought, watching this fight, and, like, there's so much boxing on at this point, and I think you guys probably feel this way, too, you guys on the podcast, you people listening. But there's a lot that is starting to get, like, okay, I can't even remember what was on 2 weeks ago. I can't even remember what was the undercard of the fight last weekend, whatever. It's getting to that point with me where it's becoming a blur. And, but I do remember that there were a few good fights this year. The Sergey Lipinets versus Lamont Peterson had a lot of drama to it, both in terms of in-ring and out of the ring storyline. Yeah. The Jarrett Hurd and Julian Williams fight was very good. Even last night, there was two, I thought, really good fights from last night. And this was one of them. Jamal James and Antonio DeMarco. For you guys, was this your fight of the year? Was it a contender? Did you think it was a good fight? Let's hear what you got to say, Fred.
I don't really rank things in this goofy fight of the year stuff. That's just too nerdy for me. I thought it was a great fight, though. I thought this is kind of how, like, you know, people say, well, you know, Jamal James is the hometown guy, and people go, well, this is a showcase fight or something, but this is a quality fight. You know, DeMarco came to fight. And James could have fought smarter and even sort of gave his performance a bad rating because he put himself in the line of fire when he could have stayed in the outside box more. But yeah, it was a great fight. It was back and forth. DeMarco was, you know, winning the rounds. Well, at least, I guess not in the scorecards. I can't remember what the scorecards were for this one.
I believe they were wide. I think there was a couple of 8-2 round cards.
Yeah, but this is, again, he's this is another thing we talk about, these close fights that lead to wide cards. That's because if every round's competitive, it's it can lead to the wide fights. I don't know. It was a great fight. I thought it was a really good fight. I wasn't as crazy for it as Ray Mancini was, but
Mancini but was actually good very good on commentary last night. He had some really funny moments that were unintentional. There was a moment during, I think it was the Gerald Washington Robert Hellenius fight, where he made a, like, oh no, it was during the DeMarco fight. He said, you know, DeMarco is, you know, a very, like, a throwback Mexican. He's really tough. He fights with a lot of heart. He has a lot of huevos. And then he stops talking and there's silence. And then he just changes the subject immediately. And you got to think that somebody was in his ear and was like, hey, you cannot say that on TV. He made a joke about Daniel Martz waiting tables, which is true. They said on the broadcast that Daniel Martz waits tables. And Mancini was like, if he wins this fight, I'm going to go to Ruby Tuesdays and I'm going to order the breakfast special. I was like, okay. But he was like super, like, he was very good.
He was amped,
last
he
night.
Was amped, yeah.
And you guys know, if you've listened to the podcast before, I don't like Ray Mancini. I think he's terrible. But last night, it was pretty enjoyable. Maybe Tony Harrison put him in his place that one day when he was on commentary. But I thought this fight was really good. And I agree with you, Jamal. Well, I don't know if you exactly spelled this out. But Jamal James had a tiny bit of struggle with Antonio DeMarco. And not enough to lose the fight. He obviously won 8-2. But enough that we could see, and we've known this for a while, that Jamal James has a limit. And it's certainly not beating Keith Thurman or Sean Porter.
Yeah, that was it. That's what I was saying. Like, Ray was going out crazy thinking, you know, Jamal James is a top contender. And I don't think so. Like, I think he can be good. Another interesting name there. But that's it. Like, if he's going to get sucked in by Antonio DeMarco into trading, I think some of the better guys are going to be drawing him into their game plans. You know, it's the same.
Yeah, I think it's like, Jamal James, like, I feel like we know very precisely his floor and his ceiling. He's been fighting a ton of guys at the same level. Like, you know, he just keeps, like, you know, has a close decision loss to Yordanis Ugas, a close win against Wally Omotoso, you know, decision win against Jojo Dan, you know, doesn't say too much if you go the distance with, if Jojo Dan goes the distance with you. Blew out Diego Chavez, kind of surprisingly. That's really his one, like, showcase win. Had a very close decision win against Abel Ramos. Got two knockouts against lesser
opponents. All right, Tom, we get it.
His last two fights. Yeah, so the point is, it's like, he's so...
Entire box wreck.
Chill,
there,
yeah,
Tom.
Chill.
Well, but I was trying to make a point, though. It's like, some fighters, like, you really, like, you've seen them win with much lower level guys, and you're sort of trying to assume what their ceiling is. Like, we know where he is. He's somewhere between, like, 10 and 15 at 147. It would be, you know, seem very unlikely for him to beat the top guys. Then we'd really have to get into the box rec, you know, going through the different guys. But, you know, yeah, it's like he exactly what you said. Like, doesn't seem like he's going to beat one of the very top guys, but he would be a very credible opponent. You know, it's like he's not Dudu and Gumbo. You know, he's a guy who's definitely right around the bottom of the top 10 or just outside of it. Like, I mean, he just continues to have these performances that put him right there.
Well, so picking up right there, right where you left off, I think 10 to 15 is probably a little low for Jamal James. I think he's a little bit better than that, but we're splitting hairs if we want to have it get into that debate. I think the ceiling for him is like he could get the WBA title, the regular one. Like right now the WBA has him at number 5, and like I can see them putting him in mandatory position to fight for the title, because you know after Pacquiao Thurman, they're going to basically just create another title because those two stupid titles will be unified. And so obviously they're going to have another one. I don't think Danny Garcia, who's in the rankings, Danny Garcia's in the rankings. I don't think he's going to probably fight for that title. So I think naturally what will happen is Alexander Besputin, I believe, is number 1. And Jamal James potentially could get ordered to fight him. Fun fact, Conor Benn is like ranked number 7 by the WBA. Like, I could see them kind of positioning Jamal James and for a mandatory title. And let's really not say or act like the WBA isn't taking orders from, like, the promoters and stuff. They know where their checks come from. And so, and, you know, their rules, as we know, are also super flexible and no one really follows them. So, yeah, I definitely think Jamal James could get a world title. I think it's conceivable. Now, would we call him, like, world champion? Would we call him the champion at 147? No, but I don't think he needs to be. Like, you know, not everyone is going to be, like, a Terence Crawford or a Canelo or a Spence. Not everybody can be that good and be at that position. And it's okay, you know. Jaime Munguia is fine where he's at as the worst world champion in boxing. Although Jamal James possibly could give him a run for his money if he won a world title. Except for the fact that Ray Vargas exists, so both guys would be in the clear. Anyway, any more you guys want to say about Jamal James?
Just on this topic, I'm going to go on a quick tangent.
That's okay.
You know, regarding like where he's going to end up, I mean, it's just the PBC has such a crazy group of guys at 147. You know, just quick, these are announced fights coming up. Manny Pacquiao, Keith Thurman, Errol Spence, Sean Porter, Adrian Broner, Ivan Redcatch just got announced after Redcatch knocked out Devin Alexander.
Wow. Live reaction from me. I didn't know that. Wow.
Well, I think that's a Coppinger. That's something
that's
like
a
that.
Terrible, yeah, but terrible fight for Redcatch. Like, I understand you just won, but if they make that fight, because I'm now looking, it's being negotiated. If they actually make that fight, which it sounds like they will, Redcatch is, I think Broner might get a stoppage.
Broner's back, baby. Anyway, Sergey Lipinets, John Molina, Ugas, Omar Figueroa, Andre Berto, Miguel Cruz. You know, it's just there's so much business at 147 with the PBC, and then you also have Danny Garcia waiting in the wings, possibly fighting Mikey Garcia. You know, that could be another pay-per-view. I mean, it's crazy they have two pay-per-views in the same division with, you know, a possible third coming and tons of additional opponents. You know, it's like you can put the winners together, the losers together. I mean, they're going to continue to do all these eight-figure fights, I mean, for 2 or 3 years, you know? And I think James is going to be in the mix somewhere. You know, he might not face the winner of, you know, either Pacquiao Thurman or Spence Porter. You know, it's like those guys are going to go on to fight each other or fight, you know, another huge fight against Danny Garcia or something. But, you know, there's room for the, you know, it's like what happens to the loser of Spence Porter? What happens to the loser of Thurman Pacquiao? You know, these guys are going to need opponents to come back. I mean, James is going to continue to be in the mix. And, you know, as much as I said, I view him as being more like closer to 15, you view him as being closer to 10, maybe. It doesn't really matter. You know, that's not really an important distinction. The point is, he's right there. He's not like a guy who's way below who's going to get blown out. He's probably going to give a tough decision fight, possibly win a round here or there, you know, given his height and his style. With that level of guy, I think he can hang in at that level. So I think I don't see him really breaking through as a star. That's not how I'm thinking about it. You know, when you're talking about them navigating him to a vacant title, I don't think he'd be the guy to get that. You know, it's just the division is just too crowded on the PBC side. But I think he's going to be a serviceable workhorse. I mean, he's also now a draw in Minnesota.
Well, that was the point I was going to make, is like, but he also, you know, crosses into that there's not a lot of fighters like this, actually, who, whether or we should say at a minimum, are just decent fighters who can sell out their hometown arenas. Like, you have Jose Ramirez with Top Rank, and like, he's pretty good. And then you have, like, you know, then there's other guys like Sean Monahan, who we know wasn't very good. Marcus Brown basically smoked him. But, like, Sean Monahan was moving big tickets in New York. You have Konaki, although I don't know that he's, like, as big of a draw. But these guys are – these are valuable – like, I don't know how – like, these guys are like the Andre Iguodalas of boxing, where, like, they're not going to – you can't headline – like, they can't anchor your entire promotion. But one of these guys, having them fight three times a year, can keep you afloat, like, and be comfortable.
Well, and he's
But I'm saying this is the kind of fighter that Fox really wants, though. He wants these guys that aren't going to be jumping up and aren't going to be pushing for pay-per-view spots, you know, because they're not that level. But you get a name, people get to see him, and they keep in the rotation. You know, you saw Fast Ugas, now he's got a fight there. Vilmar Figueroa, you can't lose. When a guy puts on a good performance with Fox, they really seem to want to get him back in the mix. And like you said, small chance he's bringing a good crowd. They're doing really well with the Armory 2 in Minneapolis, I think, you know. Especially, like, if you look at the fight compared to the crowd there to what the DAZN card had, you know, it's like a night and day.
Hey, man. Hey, chill.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. But that just highlights the point of what you need, where you need a guy that can draw a crowd, even if this is what you want. TV, where the money's there, and you don't really have to worry about the gate, and you're not taking that big of a loss. But you can come in, you sort of feel it. It looks good for TV to have a 8,000 seat, because no one cares on TV if it's 8,000 or 16,000, you know, when it was a TV fight like this level. They just see a crowd rock and they're all into it, and it starts to pick up some fans. You know, people start to get into it. They aren't as bitter about boxing when they just can have fun.
Yeah, just to piggyback up on that quickly, I mean, I completely agree, and an important piece there is the PBC has a bunch of prospects who are going to need, you know, another 1, 2, 3 years, depending on who you're talking about. So it's really helpful when you have a guy who can headline FS1 cards. I mean, that seems to be like a perfect role for James. If he's waiting for like a bigger fight, he can headline an FS1 card from the Armory. They'll sell it out, and then you get, you know, slots for all your prospects on that card, just like they did last night.
Yeah, well, if that prospect is Joey Spencer, we're talking about a decade. He's in a need.
Oh, poor Joey Spencer.
And also, one last thing on this. The Armory, one of the things that's really interesting about this venue, and, like, guys, if you think we're, like, trying to show for PBC here, we're talking about the freaking venue, so chill, okay? But that venue is really interesting to me. It has a really cool atmosphere to it. And, like, I've been trying to think about that, because it's like, yeah, you can sell out an arena and it has a cool atmosphere. It doesn't matter where you're at. But, like, I figured it out. I think I figured it out last night with the Armory. And not only is everyone there to see Jamal James and all that stuff, and he's a good guy, but there's a lot of standing room seats. So, like, people have to stand up to watch the fight. Like, it's different when you're on your feet, like, just packed in, like, at a concert, watching a fight, than when you're just sitting down, you know, relaxing. I think that really adds an element to it, to the fight, that we don't typically see in any show anywhere, including at the StubHub Center. And, you know, if Top Rank wanted to do Rob Brandt right, you know what they should do? Have him fight at the Armory. But, yeah. You know.
Minnesota's got a good boxing scene, so it's just good to see them really tap into that area.
I mean, it's kind of funny to me when you see the crowd at the Armory, because you see grandmas and stuff in the car, in the crowd.
Yeah. But that's what but that's what kept a lot of boxing going. You know, people who were fans for a long, long time just like watching boxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like my grandma's loving to see, you know, two people beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
So Gerald Washington fought Robert Hellenius on the undercard. Let me ask you guys a question about this fight, okay? It's a good fight. If you like guys who aren't really good at defense. Should Gerald Washington be made the WBC number one contender for beating Robert Hellenius? And I ask you this because there are a lot of fans out there who believe that, or no, Dillian White was made the number one contender for beating Robert Hellenius. So do you think that now Gerald Washington, who knocked out Hellenius, not decisioned him, should be made number one contender?
Yeah, why not? Because it's not like a contender slot really matters.
You think Wilder's going to be upgraded to a franchise champion?
No. I don't think they'll franchise him, because that was sort of, you know, that's all about Canelo. I don't think they're going to use that a lot because they don't really care about the political fallout for anyone else. You know, they can make fights. Canelo was separate. They were never going to let Canelo get away from the WBC again. That's all that was about.
Tom, any thoughts that you have on this fight?
I mean, that's fanboy shit. Am I supposed to respond to your joke? I mean, this is a great knockout. I mean, Gerald Washington, breathed a lot of life into his career. He'll be able to live off that knockout for a while. It's funny both with Washington and Charles Martin on the card. Like, I just want to see Efe Ajakpa fight both of them, like, immediately. Like, I feel like he's ready for that. Washington already fought Wilder. I don't know if you can really get Charles Martin back. Well, we'll talk about Charles Martin in a minute, but I don't feel like you can really get him back up to the Wilder level. So, Joe Joyce, if he ends up swinging back to the PBC side, maybe he could fight one of those guys. But, it's like there's no higher level for Washington to reach. Like, he already fought Wilder. So it's sort of funny he's even continuing to fight. I don't know what the big payday is for him, but he can probably make, it's like, I think you could put Gerald Washington versus Efe Ajakpa. That could definitely be Efe's first headline card. I think that could be.
I would like to see Gerald Washington fight, like, I don't know. I just like these level of guys fighting each other is cool with me. Like, Gerald Washington versus David Price. Let's have that. Like, these guys are not going to fight Wilder. They're not going to fight Fury. I mean, they're just clearly either A, not even in that realm of skill level, or B, they've already been there or on a similar level and got beat pretty badly. But, like, these guys fighting each other is fun. You know, heavyweights with power fighting each other, everyone always loves that. You know, they do the big numbers for a reason, and people... Like, because there's, I guess, somebody made that chart about knockout percentages, and heavyweight does have the highest knockout percentage amongst all divisions. So, I mean, why not? Charles Martin and Gerald Washington, that's a fight that I wouldn't mind watching. Ajakpa versus any of these guys, probably I don't want to watch that, but it'd be a good test for Ajakpa. I think Ajakpa would really hurt Gerald Washington.
I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to watch that, but oh well.
Because I don't want to see somebody get killed on my TV. Did you see how Gerald Washington's defense was to just pull his head back?
It's like all
in. Yeah, FA has some pretty long arms there.
Yeah, that sounds like a recipe for disaster. Charles Martin stopped Daniel Martz in what was another sensational victory for Charles Martin. That young kid is really on his way up. He is going places. Gary Antonio Russell also fought on the undercard. He looked, I thought, very good. I have not been very high on Gary Antonio. I watched him. I was like, whatever. This guy's not that good. But, like, he looked really good in this fight. I thought he looked really fast. His counters were sharp. He has a showmanship about him that his older brother, Mr. Gary Russell, doesn't have. How do you differentiate these guys? The WBC champion Gary Russell.
All the middle names, but I don't think we know Gary, Big Gary Russell's middle name, but the other ones have different middle names.
I guess he's junior because the other ones aren't juniors exactly. But he basically just chose to. Oh, it's Gary Allen. Okay, so Gary Allen. Gary Allen prefers. No, wait. Isn't Gary Allen the other brother?
No, that's Antoine.
No. Antoine is obviously the boxer. There's a non-boxer. I think it's Gary Allen.
Jesus.
Or is there Allen and Allen?
Allen and Allen. Who cares? Right
now. Anyway, Gary Antonio looked good. Gary Antoine should have been disqualified. He hit his guy while he was on the ground. That's a no-no. But he was able to get the win. Not too much to talk about. I think all we can say is they're looking impressive thus far. But opposition, of course, we need to take that into consideration. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're getting that seasoning, and we'll probably have a better idea of them maybe in 18 months. Let's move.
Yeah,
over
very
to the...
very quick on the Gary brothers. I've seen them fight a ton. They fought at the Barclays Center a lot. Gary Antoine Russell, the 140 pounder, is considered is much more highly regarded. Gary Antonio, you said you were impressed with. He was in with the 13-8 guy. I mean,
Except bantamweight.
Yeah, and again, at bantamweight. So you're talking
find
about
someone at bantamweight that doesn't have a ton of losses.
Yeah, well, the weak division anyway, and, you know, couldn't get a stoppage.
Danny Ramon.
Like, I'm having seen them fight a number of times. I think Antoine is very under the radar, but one of the best prospects in the entire sport. He was really, really highly sought after coming out of the amateurs. Very highly regarded if you talk about people who followed that class of amateurs. Gary Antonio really is less so. I mean, he's 26. He's actually the middle brother, but fights at the smaller weight. So he's like, yeah, older, smaller, and not as good. So, you know, he kind of fights on the card because they keep it in the family, but I barely consider him a prospect. I don't think he has a very high ceiling.
Moving on to the British card, we had Daniel Dubois in the main event against Daniel. Wait a second. Did someone mess up? Nathan Gorman? were you guys impressed with Daniel Dubois?
Fred?
I don't know. I can't keep track of a lot of these UK guys. You know, they come in with such heat because their fans are so emphatic, and it's like, I don't know. It's whatever. You look like you're fighting a bouncer. You know?
That's literally what I was saying too. Nathan Gorman looked like a bouncer. Like, and not even a good bouncer that, you know, wears the black shirt, the tight shirt, he's got the earpiece. Not even that kind of bouncer. I'm talking about the bouncer at like the pub that only has like enough chairs for about 12 people.
Yeah.
I mean, Gorman, I wasn't impressed at all by Daniel Dubois. At all. And for you British people that think I'm about to hate, that's not even what I'm about to say. I wasn't impressed because I couldn't take Gorman seriously as an opponent. Like, what can I really learn about Daniel Dubois by beating Nathan Gorman, who does not look like he's a very good fighter? And like, I'm not even trying to like criticize him because of the way he looks, okay? Because obviously Andy Ruiz taught us don't judge a book by his cover, but like, I'm judging a guy based off of the way he fights, and this guy can't fight. Like, who did Nathan Gorman beat that had anyone convinced that, like, this guy's a good British prospect? Can someone tell me? Because, I mean, it's ridiculous. He wasn't good. He was throwing wild hooks anytime Daniel Dubois came in with, you know, and Dubois came in with, like, some basic boxing stuff. Just basic back boxing stuff. And Gorman, like, just ate the shots. And, like, Dubois, like, looks competent. But, like, nothing jumps off the page. And now I've seen his other fights, so I know that Dubois is considered one of the top prospects in the UK, which is really not saying a lot, but the bar has been severely lowered, with maybe Buatsi being the best of the bunch, and we've seen like the Josh Kellys of the world just look completely bad. But I mean, I wasn't that impressed with Daniel Dubois, but not to the point where like it's an indictment on him. I'm not saying he's not good, just this wasn't the fight for it.
Yeah, I mean, I only saw highlights for this confession. Gorman, I don't know why people had been talking about him so much. I mean, I actually, you know, I was hoping to ask you guys, but you guys don't seem to know. So I say, any UK listeners who know, please sound off. I mean, I don't think he had that impressive of an amateur career. So it's just kind of confusing to me that people were so hyped on him. I mean, as far as Dubois, I mean, you just, you know, he's super young. He's super big. I mean, you know, he's got punching power on paper. I mean, that's pretty marketable, you know. But yeah, hard to say how high his ceiling is at this point. I mean, Gorman is such a weird thing because I didn't really understand coming in why people thought he was good. And, you know, if he actually was good, I guess it's a good win. But it's sort of a perplexing thing from this side of the Atlantic because it's like, I don't know, Gorman didn't really seem good. So I don't really know what to do with this.
They had a face-off show for guys with, like, I don't know, 12 fights each or something. It just seemed weird. Dubois looks like he's a big guy. He's young, so he might turn into something. But
yeah, he's only 21.
It's just so weird how this fight was sort of pushed, like, you know, this AJ is a showdown.
AJ, so Dubois is only 21 years old. Like, when AJ was 21, he was allegedly still selling drugs. So that's pretty good for Dubois.
Like, wasn't AJ convicted? I mean, I don't think you need to say allegedly.
He's allegedly convicted.
I wasn't there when it happened. There's no record of him like being incarcerated, so I'm not gonna accuse him of that.
And we don't trust the police too, Tom.
They're not like you.
I mean, here's the thing about Gorman, like my final thing about him, because as you can tell, I'm not a fan of him, but you should, nobody should be trained by Ricky Hatton. Why would anyone be trained? Like, why would you sign up to be trained by Ricky Hatton? That is the dumbest thing. Like, Ricky Hatton wasn't even a good fighter. And now you're going to take this not good fighter with no discipline, blew up in between fights, doing coke, and then gets knocked out by Manny Pacquiao, gets knocked out by Floyd Mayweather, gets knocked out by Vyacheslav Shevchenko. Ricky Hatton wasn't that good. How is this guy who had this stalking inside fighter who, like, just
hold and hit,
holding and hitting? How's that guy gonna train a heavyweight? How is that guy gonna train a heavyweight?
It and does, you know, always what?
Nathan Gorman looked that bad. He it looked really like does. Ricky Hatton trained him.
It really does amplify a loss to see Ricky Hatton in the corner. I remember when Sergey Rodchenko got knocked out by
looking
Tony
like
Harris,
Stu's grandma.
Yeah, Ricky Hatton has not. He's let himself go.
Nathan Gorman should let him go. Get yourself a real trainer. Go to Manny Robles. Man, 12 months ago, we would not have been saying that. We would be like, you need to get away from Manny Robles. Vyacheslav Shabransky is probably really salty about the success Manny Robles is happening or is having post departure. Although, you know, Shabransky was just never good. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's okay. Anyway, what's next for Daniel Dubois? I mean, he's legitimately a really interesting prospect. I mean it when I say he's one of the top UK prospects, especially when you consider his age. He's 21 years old. What's next for him? Is he ready for Tyson Fury or, you know, a softer touch?
I'd have to go with softer touch there. I'm not going to put him in Fury.
Take your time. I mean, he's a heavyweight. Heavyweights throw pretty hard punches, you know, as we've discussed.
Breaking news there.
You don't want to put too many miles on the odometer before he really develops. I mean, he's just so young. If there's any prospect where I'm totally fine with having him just fight, like, local laborers on the UK domestic scene, like...
So he's just, already got Gorman, so...
I don't know if you'd want to do that too much with him if he's got some talent. You're going to want to put him with stiff. Like, you're not going to put him in with top guys, but I think you want to give... They might want to put him into some real development and not the, you know, UK domestic...
Not the Joe Joyce kind of development?
Yeah, because unless you don't think he's got anything and then you just want him fighting plumbers. So
moving on to Joe Joyce. Joe Joyce won a unanimous decision over Bryant Jennings. Was the score at all controversial to you guys? Because Bryant Jennings reacted after the fight like he thought he had won the fight. And I do want to say, if you didn't watch the fight, like, the UK commentary was oddly critical of Joe Joyce. Like you could tell, it wasn't like blatant, like they were, you know, talking about him losing the fight or anything. But like, they just kept taking shots like they really don't like Joe Joyce. They're confused about the maybe the push he's getting or whatever like that. But like, I really got the sense that the commentators didn't really like Joe Joyce, and they did their job in trying to put him over, but they didn't do a good job. Their heart wasn't in it. You know, Joe Tessitore could teach him a thing or two about going over the top and putting someone over. I mean, what'd you think of Joe Joyce's performance last night? Has he fixed his problems from the past?
He's easy to hit. He's slow, and he doesn't even seem to have, you know, the tank-like punching power that we thought he might when he was against a lower level of opposition. So, ceiling isn't looking too hot. You know, he's 33. If anyone's going to get cashed out somewhere, it seems like it'll probably be Joe Joyce. You know, he's a silver medalist. He has some level of marketability, at least in the UK. Even though he only has 10 fights, it just feels like he's set to be cashed out.
You think that maybe the plan would be for Dubois to put Joe Joyce out?
I mean, good for Dubois. I don't know. I'm not going to, like, this is definitely not my area of expertise. So I was hoping I could ask you guys about these fights, but Fred doesn't seem to be, he seems even less interested than I am. So
yeah, I think Fred watched the fights, but he just is apathetic to talking about them.
I don't know. I think Dubois against Joyce would be something good because your Joyce has got a name and you can get Dubois. Yeah, but like, I think you wrapped it up. It's like Joyce slow and he doesn't have big power there and he's getting kind of old. Like he's what, 33, 34?
Joe Joyce, correct. He also has a degree in art history.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's good for him. But I don't know why he went back to the UK. Maybe he didn't want to get pushed into bigger fights or something, but I don't know.
Maybe this he looked at the options, and this is what Frank Warren is talking about, that he'll potentially be fighting Manuel Char for the WBA title. So his thinking is that, well, I can get a world championship, maybe much easier path to it, because obviously in the U.S., your path is going through Deontay Wilder, and for somebody as slow as Joe Joyce, that's almost a guaranteed death wish.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, Joyce is serviceable, but I think everyone knows he seems way too slow and not slow with heavy hands.
Yeah. So I think that's what's going to happen is Joyce will fight Char and Dubois will fight some other Anthony Joshua former opponent, because it's clear that they're trying to follow the Joshua mold in bringing up Dubois. And like, why not? It worked. So that's smart by Frank Warren. Archie Sharp fought Jordy McCrory on the undercard.
I have nothing to say. Just one last thing about Joyce. I mean, I feel like sometimes people get mad at us when we're too hard on people. And it's like, I'll just qualify what we were saying. I mean, Brian Jennings is still a good win for the 10th fight of his career, even where Jennings is. You know, he already has the win over Stavern as well. You know, Joe Joyce is being brought up pretty aggressively. Again, he's old, but, you know, for up through 10 fights, it's pretty good. BoxRec's algorithm already puts him at 18 in the division. And if you look at the list, it's actually probably okay. You know, it's like I'm kind of reminded when people are so rough on Wilder when he came up saying he's like total garbage. And then you start to realize like, well, he's flawed, but he's definitely in the top 10. And then it's like, well, he's definitely in the top five. You just look who else is in the top 10. It's like Wilder's in the top five. And so, sure enough, he ended up now being like number one or number two.
Yeah.
You know, Joyce, that's not to say he's going to be as good as Wilder, but it's not like he's total garbage. I mean, he's like top 20 heavyweight probably in his, you know, 10 fights. So
Bad. It's too bad this isn't 2014, because with those wins that Joe Joyce has on his resume, he'd be the best heavyweight on the planet. But, you know, guys aren't good in 2019.
Well, let me back up. He would be, though. You know, yeah, that's right. If he did, he would be like a top three heavyweight. So that's
okay.
Yeah,
so you're repeating
what I
just said.
They're as good as they ever were. I'm saying those wins putting him around 20. Yeah, not bad. I'm not saying he's top three. I'm saying he's top 20. And yeah, those
that's
why he's at that level.
If this was 2014, he would be number one. But unfortunately, that's not the case right now.
I'm not backing down. Like, I don't know what Tom wants to, you know, he's scared of people giving criticism. But this is it. Joe Joyce is old, you know, and like he can have the same kind of building fights as a guy like when Wilder, when everyone was trashing him, he was like 27, 28. So he still had a few years to get him a thing going and get him up there. And look, he became champion, you know. But Joe Joyce is like, the dude's old. Like, he doesn't have 4 years to develop.
He doesn't, and eye tests, okay? I think we all, and I think I speak for all three of us here, we've kind of given him a pass because his fights finish a particular way where he scores knockouts. And we're like, okay, the dude is slow as hell, doesn't appear to be very good, but hey, he's got power. And so that makes you ignore like very clear, obvious flaws. And that is that he's incredibly slow, that he's hittable. And just using the eye test, you could say, no matter what he does, there's no way you're going to be convinced that he has a shot at winning against Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, this is it. Like, he's fully formed, and you can't talk about him like he's still developing as a boxer. The guy's like in his mid-30s. You know, he's going to pick up some secrets. You know, he's old. He's set in his ways. He's set in his training.
Hey, Sergio Martinez had a late bloom, like, you know, just to provide a counterpoint here. Anything you want to say about that?
Oh, look, I'm going to defend what I said for a little bit just to make sure we're clear. I'm not saying he's a future number one heavyweight. I'm saying there's a difference between, quote, total garbage and Joe Joyce. Like, yeah, he's like top 20 heavyweight in 10 fights. That's exactly what he is. You know,
no, I want to hear Fred's Sergio Martinez story.
I'm not, you're not getting me going on Sergio Martinez.
Come on. You don't think that Joe Joyce has it in him that maybe he can overcome this? That despite the late start, that he could be a player at heavyweight? And I'm not saying being the number one guy, but a player?
No. Well, he could be a player, but like I say, okay, this is what you want. If he's like a domestic guy in the UK, sure, he's got some good years in him. But if you're talking about a guy who's going to challenge for like the actual, like against Fury, Fury would just goof on this guy. Wilder would knock him out. You know, AJ would walk through. So, this, and it's not like, okay, Joe Joyce just needs a little bit of seasoning and then he'll be on the top level. Ah, he is what he is. It's like the Bears.
Okay, odd NFL reference there. Not sure I get it, but okay. So on the undercard, Archie Sharp fought Jordy McCrory. Archie Sharp is, I mean, I'm not going to be mean, but like, I just
we
recommend...
have a lot of fights to cover. Are you fucking serious right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I'm just saying, go watch this fight, okay? It is hilarious. It is like, you know, it's not bad in the Ted Cheeseman way. It's bad in a...
Hey. How are you going to jump on a man Ted Cheeseman like that?
Ted Cheeseman is terrible, but like Archie Sharp is like, Tom, go watch this fight. Fighter. It'll make you laugh. It's a good waste of your time. Much better than the Ray Vargas versus Tomoki Kameda fight. I mean, who was happier with the result of this fight? Golden Boy, because they retained a world champion, or Jaime Munguia, because he lost his position as the worst world champion in the sport of boxing?
Well, I mean, this is such a weird
a bit too
card.
Japan-friendly here in this podcast.
I mean, how many people... Look, what's the headline here? How many people do you think were at the StubHub
Center? Okay, this guy's going straight for the jugular. Doesn't want to ease
what?
Into it.
Save that for the end. Talk about the fight. Come on, Tom. Let's focus on the fight for us.
Okay.
No, I think it's necessary. Oscar. Look, there
the
is
fight was
no...
dreadful. The fight was dreadful. So,
like, Ray Vargas headlining a card is just crazy. I mean, the simple, like, this was the thought process I was trying to go through. I thought you were just going to throw out a number, you know.
No,
great.
I'm not
Let's
trying
just say
to be mean. I was going to ease into that stuff.
Were there, but, yeah, it's like, why did this fight happen? Why did this card happen? Because Vargas has a belt, and we've heard from various interviews that, you know, ESPN Plus and DAZN want to have, you know, for the promoters to get paid, they want to have a world title in the headline, and then they get to put on a card and they get paid to do it. So we get Vargas, like you said, one of the most underwhelming champions in the sport, is headlining.
That's not
a card.
What I said. I said the worst.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to sell your comment short. Yes, so
thank you.
Quoting Angelo, the worst titleist in the sport, thank is you. Headlining a card, drawing no money. And, you know, what happens? You get two Golden Boy prospects, including Oscar De La Hoya's nephew, you know, knocked out on the undercard in front of 50 people.
Damn, Tom is just like, just a hot shot in the territory right here, just blowing all my headlines here.
Yeah, he just wiped Jeez. Up the entire discussion card there, Tom.
Tom's been saving up. He's more efficient in here than Ronnie Rios.
I'll go do the dishes while you guys wipe up the mess I've left.
No, I mean, look, the Ray Vargas and Tomoki Kameda fight was pretty bad. Ray Vargas has a style that, I mean, it's just not going to get over, especially at the StubHub Center, like, which is now called the Dignity Health Sports Park, but forever we're just going to call it the StubHub Center. That's a venue where we expect wars. We expect everyone to have a great fight. And, like, without fail, we usually get good fights there. And this was just not it. Like, Ray Vargas is just so... adverse to any sort of exchanges. Tomoki Kameda tried to make it a fight. Tomoki Kameda landed big shots in the fight, but for the most part, it was Ray Vargas just pecking away. I mean, Ray Vargas has basically become Miguel Vasquez of 2019. And if you don't remember who Miguel Vasquez is, Miguel Vasquez was just dreadful to watch. I mean, you may remember him like, Josh Kelly beat him, or Josh Taylor, whichever one of those guys. I don't know the difference between the two of them. I mean, it's a true story. Like, the real Mexican in that ring last night was Tomoki Kameda. I mean, he speaks perfect Spanish. He actually fights with a Mexican style. His wife is Mexican. I mean, he's the one that...
I don't know. They were discussing which Mexican style, you know. Come on.
Yeah, do you think Abel Sanchez would... do you think Abel Sanchez would bless his Mexican style status?
Which one? Tomoki Kameda?
Yeah, no. It was a dumb joke. We don't need to keep going with it.
No, for sorry. Sure, for sure.
But Kameda, it was a good joke. Tom.
Honestly, Kameda at least tried to make the fight. I mean, Ray Vargas was. It's really interesting because Ray Vargas, was kind of like gesturing Tomoki Kameda to fight. But then every time Tomoki Kameda would walk forward, Ray Vargas would step away. So it was just a bizarre fight. It wasn't very good. Ray Vargas got the decision. And I don't think anybody cares enough to dispute whether or not that was like a legit decision or not. Although I do think Vargas probably edged it if we're like just going by the rules of scoring. But I mean, this is just a bad fight. Like the sooner they get the title off of Ray Vargas, the better. And like that title would much better be suited to be on Danny Roman. And Roman isn't much better in terms of like enjoyability than Ray Vargas. But like it's something, you know?
Yeah, I thought he won the fight, but it really, especially with the way the undercard was going there, it sucked all the life out of the place.
I mean, we should move on to the undercard because it's far more interesting. But Ronnie Rios and Diego de la Hoya, like that was a legitimately good fight, I thought. I thought it was really entertaining. It was also one of those fights where you just ask yourself, like, why is he doing this? Why is he fighting in this way? I mean, Diego de la Hoya, the guy doesn't have much power. I think we all know that. But he's very fast. He's a good offensive fighter. But, like, his defense isn't quite there. And he decided that he was going to trade with Ronnie Rios, who is a long-established veteran in the sport of boxing. He's been in there with good fighters. And De La Hoya, I mean, Sergio Mora kept pointing it out. He's got his chin up. He's fighting with his chin up. The guy needs to tuck his chin. And then, what do you know, Ronnie Rios kept catching him. And ultimately, Diego De La Hoya quit. So one prospect down, Rocky Hernandez also got knocked out in the first round. Not quite a good night for Golden Boy. I mean, if you think about it, Ray Vargas stunk out the joint in what is LA, which is a boxing hotbed in one of the boxing sanctuaries around the world, in the StubHub Center. I mean, we should probably get to now. So, Tom?
I don't know why. I'd like to go back to this card because I liked it a lot. And I usually dump on the Zone all the time and even like Golden Boy a bit. But
I mean,
this was
no friend, by all means. Card. You until, seem until to Vargas not enjoy anything. It. Go on.
No, and until Vargas killed this card, this was a really enjoyable card. Like, it was.
The fights were fun.
They were really fun. And it was actually a good matchup. So, when they go, not a good night for Golden Boy, well, this is the thing with Diego De La Hoya and even the guy who led off the card who got knocked out there in the first round. Great knockout, too. It's like, okay, so this was their test fights for these guys to really, like, Diego De La Hoya's kind of had fights where he should win. And here's a fight where, okay, let's put him up against a guy who's going to test him. He failed it. So I thought they were good matchups. And, yeah, it didn't turn out the way, but that's what you get when you actually have to shake a guy out and see if he's got something finally.
Yeah,
but yeah, they were just enjoyable fights. Just, you know, that crowd. I don't know if Oscar's even still with Golden Boy because no
he
one's
wasn't
ever
there.
Seen him. Yeah, he's never there. He's never at any of these matches.
When was the last time Oscar was at a Golden Boy card?
I don't know. Probably.
Oh God, I remember he was at the first Canseo fight where he was like, the Mexican beat the Puerto Rican, and like the crowd just didn't really know how to react. And then, yeah, I think that's the last time I've seen him in public.
So yeah, I was really confused when this fight got announced because Ronnie Rios obviously is, you know, he's not beating Leo Santa Cruz or Shakur Stevenson. That's not his level, but he's like at a level where I think is a little too high for Diego De La Hoya. Now, I didn't think De La Hoya was going to lose this fight coming in. I thought, okay, they must know something because for the most part, matchmakers, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. They make the fights that they think will be the most competitive, the most entertaining, but also give their guy the edge. You know, De La Hoya didn't come into this fight because they thought he was going to lose. It was clearly this fight was to build Diego De La Hoya. And that didn't quite happen. So, but I thought it was this, like, De La Hoya has been, like, fought once in the past year. Like, I don't know. Diego De La Hoya definitely has that aura of like family member, like son of famous fighter. Although he's the nephew of De La Hoya, and I don't really think they're that close. Given Oscar wasn't even at the fight, and I've never seen him really in the ring after De La Hoya fights, so kind of weird.
Yeah, but like you said, that's typical Oscar fights. Now he's nowhere. He's found.
He's yeah. Doing blow with John Skipper.
Yeah. Very quick comments on this. Like I allegedly did not. I thought Diego De La Hoya was pretty good. It's like 122 is kind of a weird division. It's so fractured. It's kind of hard to compare the different guys because there aren't that many common opponents. It's a pretty fractured division. But I thought Diego De La Hoya was probably in the top 10. So, yeah, and regarding, I mean, Fred makes a good point regarding the matchmaking. I mean, it's on one hand, there's no question it's a failure of matchmaking from the standpoint that, like, your goal as a matchmaker is to make your guys look good and build them up to the point where they can get, you know, a big fight. You know, definitely looking at the loss, I don't think they're patting themselves on the back saying, yeah, we got our prospect beat, the nephew of the owner of the company knocked out. But,
Oscar,
you know,
that
said again.
Too. Just differently, though. Geez, what's wrong with me?
Look, Ronnie Rios, not bad. I mean, you know, basically a gatekeeper type opponent. So, I mean, to Fred's point, it's like, okay, he was given a test and he failed the test. I mean, if he couldn't beat Ronnie Rios, I mean, that just means Diego De La Hoya was going to get knocked out by Ray Vargas. Well, maybe not knocked out because Ray Vargas just doesn't.
Yeah, knocked out by Ray Vargas. Settle down.
But Daniel Roman, I mean, Daniel Roman is increasingly looking like the best guy in the division.
All right. I can't wait to talk about this top rank card because you were there,
sure.
Tom.
And I was.
Shakur Stevenson was in the main event. I don't know how top rank let you in the building posting that video of Shakur Stevenson beating the hell out of that guy on the floor who deserved it, by the way. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know the story.
I'll team Shakur with that one.
I mean, if Shakur's hitting you, you probably deserved it. I mean, the guy, he's so nice. You know, this is the same kid that hates to lose.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom, tell us about it. Well, actually, you know what? Okay, whatever. We'll talk about this because I think the venue was configured similarly to the way the StubHub Center was configured for the Vargas and Kameda fight. So tell us about it.
Sure. I don't know. I feel like this will flow better if you ask questions more specifically. But regarding like just the event and the venue, I was really impressed with the promotion, to be honest. I think the announced attendance was 5,100. I had done some rough math looking at the seating chart, and it looked to me like it was configured for around 5,000, and it was about three quarters full. So I would get that number a little lower, and I know Top Rank has gotten called out for that, for their numbers not matching. I know Fred addressed that it's more complicated than that. Anyway, whether it was 3,500 or 5,000, it was a good crowd, a very lively crowd.
You sent me a video. I think 4,000 or so, 4,500. That looked like about accurate.
Yeah, it's not like they're claiming there were 60,000, and it was, you know, it's like it's if the number is not right, it's not far off. Yeah, again, impressed with the event. I mean, Shakur Stevenson was a 2016 Olympian. Now he's headlining a fight with 5,000 people in the audience, and you know, credit to Top Rank again. It's like they had a high school kid who I had never heard of, but he's sort of the next Joey Spencer. And I mean that from the standpoint of
the guy that
when
sold 1,000 tickets?
Yeah, he was a very good junior amateur, but never fought in the adult amateurs. So, you know, it's very specifically the Joey Spencer track where it was like instead of entering the adult amateurs, he turned pro instead at 17, which Spencer, again, also did. But, so
that
just
always goes well.
Very competent promotion, you know. They cobbled together a bunch of guys, sold, you know, the venue was, it was like, I mean, that's the funny thing. It's like we're talking about 5,000 seats being a huge success. It's like a 20,000 seat venue, you know. They had just the lower bowl and then like half the lower bowl, you know, but it looked good on TV from what I've seen from the clips. I haven't watched the full broadcast back. I mean, also just one other thing. I mean, it's the just Top Rank operation is so different from the PBC operation in the way they run these fights. Like, you know, and that's really, it's like the PBC philosophy. Like Al Haymon takes a much smaller cut than Top Rank, and Top Rank is, you know, expected to do more in terms of the promotion. I mean, they have ton more people running around. I mean, at the PBC side, you basically have like the network running the event, and then like a few PR people who are basically just facilitating the press to cover the event. The Top Rank people really are trying to cover the event and almost are just sort of trying to run interference on the media. And basically what I mean by that is sort of just like they have the message they want to get out, and they're just sort of trying to make sure the media sort of plays nice with that. I mean, there were not that many people there. They did not grant a huge amount of credentials. We've had other Top Rank events. I haven't been rejected for a credential, but other people from Sunday Puncher have been. So it's so different. I mean,
did they make you delete your GIF of Shakur Stevenson crying?
I'm pretty sure they didn't know who I mean, it was really, so this is, I could go on and on with this, and I will a little bit, because I think, yeah, I think people might find some of this stuff interesting, I hope, but
I do.
They had, yeah, we can talk more offline if you're interested. There's a lot more of the details, but they had sort of like
Tom, don't do a whole expose.
Yeah, I don't know if Fred is being sarcastic there now. I feel like an idiot.
No, but he's being serious.
Yeah, like they had just a few media members who were kind of like the top media in front. I was like just behind that, which, you know, I certainly not offended. I mean, I just do this as a hobby, but, and they were just like totally on those guys, you know, like glad handing them, joking around, like the Evan Korn, who's like their main PR guy, who's always on like very prominent on boxing Twitter, getting out all the top rank messaging. You know, was really yucking it up with the guy sitting next to them. I mean, and you saw that. I mean, you know, I'm not going to name names, but it's not too hard to figure out if you were looking at the event. Like, if you look at who was, you know, they had a few key talking points they were trying to get out, and those guys were absolutely defending them. I mean, during and after the event, they were really trying to push back on the Josh Greer fight was a robbery. People just kept repeating
how?
That. Oh, that fight wasn't a robbery. I mean, it was just like surreal. Just they're like top rank. People kept having loud conversations in view of the media. They just kept walking by like, wow, that wasn't a robbery. You know, it was close, I thought. And I thought maybe the other guy won, but I looked back on the monitors and yeah, definitely Greer pulled that out. It was really weird. They just kept like repeating it over and over again. I'm not going to say that they were, you know, really just trying to influence the media that way, but it was really weird. And, you know, definitely like Carl Moretti came over and was talking to the top media guys about that. So was Evan Korn. And regarding the main event, the big thing they were trying to push there was don't blame Stevenson. A lot of people turned down the fight. We got the best opponent we could, which of course is horseshit. I mean, the opponent was total garbage. He lost to Hugo, you know, it's like Hugo Ruiz, the guy who Gervonta Davis walked through, like, he lost to Hugo Ruiz in his last fight. Like, the guy's coming off a loss. Like, the reason why they couldn't get a good opponent is because, one, they didn't want someone who's going to make Stevenson look bad, and because they probably offered about $30,000, you know, as a payment. So you're not going to get a good opponent under those circumstances. But, yeah, I'm going to stop here. I think a lot of people are probably, like, I'm probably more interested. Maybe you guys are, but maybe not the listeners.
Right, well,
but,
yeah, we got to make sure the listeners
are happy. Yeah, we'll keep it moving.
So
listeners are probably drunk anyway. No, I think, Tom, I wasn't joking on that part, just on the fact that I want to talk to you offline about it. That's the joke. But I'm saying...
Yeah, Tom just got bodied.
I'm saying this is a very important thing, I think, when it comes to media and the way Top Rank, it's always been covered. You know, and you see the, like, people just dump and dump and dump on PBC. So, like, the point is, like, a lot of people to where now The Athletic is writing articles about the incensed PBC fans. Yeah, it's because they watched this years of bullshit of people just tearing apart the PBC for no reason. So you can see Top Rank in action, this where they only, like, they'll let other media guys in, but they only care about guys who are going to put the message out. You know, and then they stick with that message. So Tom just hit you with the truth right there. PBC is more, they're a little bit more open with the credentials, and they're more open with your opinion. Like, they didn't blacklist people despite what some writers want to claim, you know. They let you write what you want for the most part, but some want to control guys who actually have, like, followings, like who work for major publications and everything. So you know, I think that's an interesting thing to see.
Well, yeah,
in
one
action.
Last thing to piggyback. Well, thank you. I'm glad someone found it interesting. I hope at least a few listeners did. But, you know, and you see that on Twitter as well, where, I mean, it's really reminded me more of like a political operation where, like, they have their talking points, they have their messaging. If someone opposes it, they'll go after it. I mean, it's really weird. I mean, again, you don't see that from the PBC at all. And you see it from Eddie Hearn a little bit, but it's like, you know, if someone is off the script, they'll try to put that person in, you know, and they'll do it kind of in a snarky way, but they're really like, they really play offense and defense in a much more hands-on way than you see from other, and again, it's like, okay, I mean, those employees literally don't exist in the PBC infrastructure. Again, it's just like, it's a different thing. There's a strong manager in Al Heyman, and then their PR firms they worked with, and they have promoters they work with for hire, who's really more of their job is really just a pure promoter in terms of staging an event. You know, Top Rank has, you know, much, much more going on in terms of their communication and social media infrastructure.
Well, let me take this further, because I think what you're saying is 100% accurate, and I'll give you the evidence for it. So you saw the smoke from the gun at the arena, which is funny that they were talking like loudly, you know, trying to hint everyone what the message was. But a couple days before the fight, news started to come out that Shakur Stevenson's next opponent was likely to be Oscar Valdez. And that is to throw everyone off the scent here. So, like, they have to justify this level of opponent. Well, what's the best way to get you not concerned about this guy who, you know, for whatever reason, you know, you said that maybe they weren't offering a lot of money, so he was basically the only one that would have taken it. Whatever the case may be, Alberto Guevara was just not a good level of opponent for for Shakur Stevenson. But you start talking about Oscar Valdez next, and everyone seems to forget, like, oh, wait, Valdez was supposed to fight Carl Frampton next. That's the fight that's being talked about. Or Josh Warrington. Josh Warrington's name hasn't been mentioned, but you start throwing out Oscar Valdez, and it sort of just makes everyone forget that Shakur Stevenson is fighting Alberto Guevara. It shifts your perspective from seeing what's in front of you to what is potentially going to happen. And therefore, it downplays the significance of this level of fight. Now, you know, you can complain about it all you want. I really don't care. I don't care in the slightest who Shakur Stevenson fights, because there's too many TV dates. Shakur Stevenson's headlining a card. He's like 11-0. Like, there's no way there's no way that Shakur Stevenson is not going to be facing somebody who's like not that good. Okay.
Well, this is where the broadcast is weird. And like I said, so here you got Shakur Stevenson. He's very young. He's only got, you know, this is his 12th fight, right? 12-0?
He's 12-0 now. Yeah.
Yeah. And but then on the broadcast, there Timothy Bradley's like almost losing his mind going, top guys don't want to fight him. And all this nonsense. Just like they do this with every fight scene. They're being ducked. They're being ducked. It's like, really? Or do you think anyone at the top with a belt is worried about Shakur Stevenson? You know, they're not going, oh, we got to avoid this guy. He's got 11 wins. You know, they're not. So when they push that thing, like I said, that's why, like, when Tom talking about it, that's what sort of draws me. I can't really enjoy a lot of the ESPN stuff, because they're so about pushing their message. You know, and that's why I think a lot of people don't like the PBC stuff, but that I like, you know, Goosen fighting with Lewis, and Mancini fighting with whoever, just being a little nutty, because you know they're not pushing a message. They're just saying what's in their mind. And sometimes it's, you know, it might be dumb or it might be empty, but at least they're not sitting there pushing a narrative from the promoter. And that's what's so weird with the ESPN thing. It's basically Top Rank's operation. You know, it's not like they're paying Top Rank to provide fights. It's Top Rank running that whole show. And when they're out there yelling about how these guys are ducking Shakur Stevenson, it's just like, come on, guys. That's just dumb.
I think I talked about this maybe a year ago when Top Rank got their deal, but I basically was saying, like, I don't know, Tom, you may remember this, that Top Rank on ESPN is basically letting the inmates run the asylum, because Top Rank basically has control over everything.
Yeah, I mean, for better or worse, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
When you see Stevenson, you know, and they have, again, it's like you don't know how much the tickets were and blah, 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 and, you know, the whole thing. But, I mean, you know, they got around 5,000 people in the building. That's impressive for Stevenson's 12th fight. I mean, whatever the details are related to that, you know, it's to whatever extent it was papered or the tickets were cheap or, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's 22, 12 fights. They did that. I mean, And the crowd was into it. I mean, it didn't seem like a stuffed room. You know, it was like people were there and they were excited to see Shakur Stevenson. Like, you know, he had gotten the undercard got booed really loudly, which maybe we'll get to Josh Greer in a few minutes. But, you know, Stevenson had gotten booed on the MSG undercard, the Amir Khan Terrence Crawford undercard at MSG, which is, you know, you'd think would be the same audience. New Jersey is not very far. I mean, the MSG is not very far from Newark, but he had a hero's welcome here. So, you know, something is working. You know, a lot of people roll their eyes about that. You know, a lot of people when they were saying on the pay-per-view broadcast, at least I haven't watched this back, but when they were saying the champion, he would be a betting favorite. I mean, it's Max Kellerman trying to sound like he's saying something reasonable, but it's completely ridiculous. He would be a betting favorite over any of the champions in the division. Then it's like, no, that of course that's not true. But, you know, there are enough people who believe it, you know, and that is something interesting to see, like, as the top ranked deal goes on. I mean, a bunch of us were kind of clowning how the Terrence Crawford pay-per-view did compared to the Errol Spence pay-per-view. But, you know, it's still something. You know, this is something. I mean, they have their successes here and there. So, yeah.
So Shakur Stevenson, now at the top of the IBF rankings, he wants to fight Josh Warrington. He's tweeted at him today. Do you think that he's ready to fight Josh Warrington? Do you think it's better if he fights Oscar Valdez?
Oh, I need to jump in here. Just to be clear, and you guys can maybe tell me what they said on the broadcast. So, and when I was talking about the talking points, the other big talking point, sorry, that I forgot to mention, Carl Moretti, you know, and I literally heard Carl Moretti talking to the bigwig boxing writers in front of me. They were saying Oscar Valdez is planning to move up to no comment. The one you're thinking of actually wasn't there. Planning to move up to 130, so Stevenson would fight for the vacant belt, which makes a lot more sense. It's like when Shakur Stevenson's
that's a top rank special.
Yeah, when Stevenson's best win is Christopher Diaz.
I love this.
And I know Fred always goofs on me for talking about BoxRec rankings, but, you know, Alberto Guevara, who's outside of the 100 on BoxRec, it's like, yeah, they sort of bullshit about everyone's avoiding him, but, you know, you don't go from someone outside the top 100 to Oscar Valdez. As limited as Oscar Valdez is, it makes, you know, you're like, the point A to point B, you know, it's like you're sort of, there's something missing there. It's like, oh, okay, what they're actually going to do is have him fight a nobody for the vacant title. And the name they've tried to talk about for that is Alberto Machado. So, okay.
Oh, hell no.
Machado, you know, and again, it's like, are they going to try to make that into a big fight? I mean, he gave Valdez a surprisingly difficult fight, got annihilated by Lomachenko, and then Stevenson might outbox him for 12.
Bro,
you know,
Alberto Machado just got smoked by Andrew Cancio. Who are you talking about?
Mariaga. Sorry.
There you go.
Big M. Yeah, sorry about that. But anyway, what were they saying on the broadcast? Though? Were they saying he was going to fight Valdez?
Do you think I had that not muted?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just, you know, podcast content, etc. But
no,
that's
I'm
what
not
Carl
trying to listen thinks. To that's Joe Tessitore go nuts.
And I mean, again, that's been tweeted by those guys since then, you know. So that's just not like I'm breaking any news here.
Right, right. I'm trying to look up the WBO rankings to see who would be the guy.
Well, that was the name they were floating.
I love that fight.
Mariaga, like, turned down this fight. He'd prefer to fight for the vacant title. So it seems
like do. The WBO champion is Heather Hardy for the female belt.
And very interesting.
Dude, oh my God.
Oh, Shakur might make that fight.
You guys. You don't know how happy I am by this. So let's just name the top 10. Actually, let's see if you guys can guess without looking. Just guess who the top 10 at featherweight are. For the WBO.
I couldn't even name 10 featherweights. Come on.
Go on, Tom. Name them.
You know,
if you're smart, you'll get all of them.
To the WBO's website before. No, you got to go. I don't want dead air here.
Oh, just name them. It all gets cut out.
No, I just say, yeah, I can't. I'm looking up the website right now.
Okay, sorry, so you don't have to. This is going to be hilarious. So number one, Shakur Stevenson. Number two, Joette Gonzalez. Number three, Jesse Magdaleno. Number 4, oh, Carl God. Frampton. Number 5, Michael Conlan. Number 6, Miguel Mariaga. Number 7, Ryan Walsh. 8, Ruben Villa. 9, Mushy Mori, which is a real name. And 10, Dave Penalosa. Yeah, so I think it's safe to say that he's going to fight somebody from Top Rank.
Yeah.
Jesse Magdaleno, yeah. Probably.
Well, like you said,
Magdaleno
again,
fights very soon on the Frampton undercard.
That's why the broadcast is so ridiculous. They all know that the WBO is basically like the in-house promoter for the Top Rank now. You know, so with this yelling about the guys are ducking them and they can't get fights, it's like, pay them money. That's how you get a fight.
Jeez. Shakur Stevenson's so happy Errol Spence, got the fight with Jesse Magdaleno for the vacant WBO title. That would be so perfect. I know, I like, there's some people that are probably upset about that, but I don't care. I think that's just hilarious.
Well, it's also funny. Mariaga fought at 135 in his last fight, and somehow he's still in the featherweight rankings. But
no, he's not in the rankings. He's not ranked here. Oh, wait, yeah. Oh, wait, actually, I'm an idiot. Yes, he is. Anyway, do you think that he would be the favorite if they made a fight with Josh Warrington? I feel like we've had this conversation before.
I just don't think the fight's going to happen. I mean, the most likely thing, again, is Mariaga for the vacant belt, which is a very marginal fight, and it looks like they're going to be patting themselves on the back for it, which is ridiculous.
I would pat myself on the back, too, if we got people to buy into Shakur Stevenson as being a legitimate fighter because he beat Miguel Mariaga for the vacant WBO title.
And also, just to be clear, I think Shakur Stevenson is a very good fighter. I think also, though, I'm just not going to give him more credit than he deserves for beating Bad. Yeah, I think he's a very good fighter, but, you know.
Shakur Stevenson easily beats Josh Warrington. That's
they're dropping
a lot
of smoke and mirrors on us right now. You know, it's like, okay, he fought number 140. Oh, but everyone avoided him. What, 139 fighters avoided him? You know, it's like, ugh. Anyway, and again, I'm speaking in generalities. I don't follow BoxRec that closely, but it's helpful in broad strokes. I'm ready.
Yeah, again, like that's what's the problem with it. They're like smothering their talent, but they kind of did that with Teofimo too. You know, he has one good fight, and they're like, oh, Lomachenko's next. It's like, come on, guys.
Let the guy develop.
Yeah, let him breathe. Like, Shakur Stevenson, that's it. Yeah, it gets 5,000 people in. That's really good for, you know, a guy with his 12th fight. You know, but not all that all get all lost up, you know, because of Top Rank's nonsense.
I think they might mess up when they put out the narrative, and maybe the narrative shoots a little too high, then, and it creates an expectation that may be a little too far out for the fighter to reach. Because Stevenson is very good. I'd put him as the favorite against Josh Warrington. I don't care, British fans, Josh Warrington's not good. I'd put him as a favorite against Oscar Valdez. I don't care. Oscar Valdez, not better than Shakur Stevenson. Shakur Stevenson, I think the only guys at 126 that would be a clear favorite over him is Gary Russell Jr. And that still, I think, would be a competitive fight. You know, just like I said, Teofimo Lopez a year and a half ago would beat Robert Easter Jr. And someone here, I'm not going to name which one of you guys it was, but some one of you pushed back on that. One of you is looking silly today.
I'm not going to bite. Look, this is my comment on what you said. Just look, Shakur Stevenson, very good fighter. But I again, if you have to rate what he's doing, on paper, his accomplishments weren't really that much better than Diego De La Hoya. You know, which
is fair.
As I said, I thought Diego De La Hoya was okay. Was moving. You know, he had the one notable win in Caballero. That's about the Christopher Diaz. You know, pretty comparable. I just say to any. Yeah, I know there were some things about the weight class jumping and stuff. But
no, I would say Caballero was the better win.
Yeah. Okay.
Hindsight. You know, we could play the hindsight game, but like, if we were to look before each of those fights, like before the fights actually happened, I think we would say that was the more dangerous fight for De La Hoya than Christopher Diaz was for Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah, I just the simple point I want to make before we move on is just, you know, listeners, if there's one thing to take away from this, just rate guys for what they actually do and not weird projected stuff that's imaginary, like, you know, 139 fighters avoiding Shakur Stevenson that certainly were not offered the fight, and if they were offered minimal amounts of money, because if Top Rank wanted to make any of those fights, they could. You know, it's just, you know, reward fighters for what they actually do in the ring, not, you know, bullshit spin.
So on the undercard, talking about rewarding fighters who actually do stuff. Joshua Greer, bye-bye, who has a stupid gimmick carrying a pillow, and it's stupid because the guy doesn't...
I like the pillow.
Doesn't punch. He's not a puncher. Did Joshua Greer deserve the decision that he got? Tom, you were there, so you have the best, like, way...
Well, I'll answer quickly, then throw it back to you guys. So, I mean, I did the Reddit round-by-round boxing. I scored it a draw. I was sitting next to an interesting guy who actually does amateur judging. He does some boxing writing and also does amateur judging and reffing. He felt that the opponent deserved a few more rounds, Patapov. But I don't know. I mean, it was a close fight. I think robbery is a little ridiculous. It's always – that's always – I say that with a caveat. It's like, okay, it was a close fight. And but, you know, the A side is the one who got the benefit of the doubt, you know. And Patapov is going to go back to Russia, you know, with the loss here. So, but yeah, curious if you guys scored it and if you have a strong opinion about it. I mean, in my mind, it was just a close fight. A lot of the rounds were very similar. Greer had success when he was grinding to the body on the inside. Patapov had success when he could get a little bit of distance and land cleaner shots upstairs. I mean, he seemed to land most of the clean shots in the fight, but Greer frequently... when he won rounds, it was on, you know, activity and aggression. What about you guys? Do you have a clear thought on the scoring?
Well, I didn't score it, so I definitely don't have a clear thought on the scoring. So I'm not upset about the scorecards. I do think Potapov won the fight, but I'm not going to sit here and say, well, that was a robbery and Joshua Greer got it because he was the A side. Because, like, to me, the takeaway going out of the fight, whether Potapov got the decision or not, was like, Potapov's a better fighter than Joshua Greer. And Joshua Greer isn't that good. Now, I wasn't high on Greer just to begin with. You know, Joshua Greer seemed to me like a showbox, a guy who probably wasn't even good enough to graduate from showbox. And, you know, guys definitely can graduate off of showbox. Jaron Ennis looks like he's on his way to doing that. And there's countless other guys who fought on showbox who've gone on to become world champions. But Greer didn't look like the guy, you know. Harmonito De La Torre is a name that I can throw out, who just wasn't good enough to graduate from showbox. And that's what Joshua Greer took him for. But, like, he's a charismatic guy. He's engaging when they interview him and stuff. And he's got a gimmick that I think could get over with the pillow stuff. But just watching this fight, I was just, like, not convinced that this guy's really that good. And I just walked away thinking Potapov is a good fighter. Like, he does a lot of things right. You know, Potapov is not the best. I don't think Potapov is going to be this, like, dominant world champion going forward, but he's better than Greer. And so I do definitely agree with you. All the rounds were basically the same. There were a couple of differences, but they were all basically the same. Potapov outgrinded Greer. Greer didn't go to the body. Andre Ward and Timothy Bradley were talking about how he needed to go to the body, and why didn't he go to the body? That's where he's having success. He does not like it to the body, etc., etc. But I mean, Greer wasn't listening to them, so was what it was. It was a good undercard, though. I thought that was a really good undercard fight. Who knew that this fight would have been as competitive as it was? And you know, I'll tip my hat to Top Rank on this one, because this was a good undercard fight for what was a very bad main event in terms of, like, on paper matchmaking heading into it.
Are you talking about the Greer fight still?
Yeah, but I did mention the Shakur Stevenson fight being a bad matchup.
Yeah. No, I just... Sorry, I'm jumping in before Freddie can talk, but I thought you made a great point, though. You made a great point about the Patapov being the more talented fighter. And, you know, this is something that I always find so interesting when there's a fight where one guy clearly seems to have the edge in talent and is landing, you know, doing a much better job of setting up shots and landing them, but didn't necessarily win the fight because the other opponent was more aggressive. You know, at the end of the day, there's still an athletic element. And I thought, you know, this was one of those fights where Patapov, you know, again, I definitely agree with you, showed that he's the more talented guy. But, you know, Greer was able to hustle a lot of rounds there, at least on my scorecard. Yeah, I just – that was something I was talking about during the fight with the guy next to me. So, I like that point because I feel like it's frustrating to me sometimes people will just look at the highlight clips in between rounds and pay more attention to the one or two cleanest shots of the round and ignore the remaining 2 minutes and 50 seconds of the of action. Yeah. Anyway, ready to move on. Unless Fred has anything on this.
Nothing.
It's like, these guys don't weigh over 140. Not interested. Yep. Teofimo Lopez fights this week. He'll fight Masayoshi Nakatani. I'm sure you guys have followed Nakatani's career very closely, so I really don't need to get into this one too much. On the undercard, Maxim Dadashev versus Subriel Matias. We're not going to talk about these fights. We're going to talk about... I don't know. This is kind of awkward to bring up. I don't really want to talk about this, but I guess we should. Terrence Crawford potentially going to fight Igis Kavalauskas next. The reports are that it'll be October 18th in Omaha. Fred, do you have any thoughts on this fight?
Of course. Well, this is it. We know Crawford's got nobody to fight. You know, they're locked in. And the top rank isn't at the point where they want to really make a fight with anyone, you know, from the PBC side. So this is what you get. It's obviously a back step, you know, because you got to go back to Omaha and sort of rebuild, you know, Crawford, who should be, you know, rolling, but that's it. That Khan fight didn't do him any favors, and he signed his deal. So this
is what you get. It's on ESPN, by the way.
Yeah, well, of course.
Kind of makes your point a little stronger.
You think they're going to pay per view that one? Come on, they probably have to be paying people to buy it. Yeah, so you're going to hear a lot about how, you know, everyone's ducking Terrence Crawford, and he can't get a fight with the top guys because they're scared of him. So that's what it's going to be. Yeah.
Oh, Fred over here trying to get out in front of Top Rank's spin.
I can hear Max Kellerman talking right now. So
talking about how Errol Spence doesn't want to fight him because Spence is fighting Porter and Crawford's fighting Kavalauskas.
Yeah, because they're on pay-per-view, so they're obviously, you know, they don't want to be fighting on ESPN TV broadcasts.
I mean, what do you think, Tom?
Curious to hear your thoughts.
You know what my thoughts are.
Yeah, if you want me to go, I mean, just Terrence Crawford's had such a weird year. I mean, they talked so big on the Amir Khan fight. You know, they airlifted in Amir Khan, paid him a big purse. It just always seemed weird when Spence was fighting Garcia. I don't know if they really just miscalculated and thought that fight wasn't going to do that well. But, you know, it ends up doing close to 50,000 tickets. And, you know, meanwhile, the Terrence Crawford Khan fight didn't even sell out, you know, I think 14,000 in New York, did, you know, about one third the number of pay-per-view, or less than half the number of pay-per-view buys. But then meanwhile, you know, they're Bob Arum's calling out Errol Spence on the card, which just seemed kind of crazy.
Boycott PBC.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he said it's got to be 50-50. And then, you know, after the figures came out for that fight, that just seems kind of ridiculous. So really just a lot of muddled messaging related to Terrence Crawford out of that whole thing. And then, again, Top Rank has no opponents. Like, before I exhaustively listed all of the PBC welterweights, I mean, it's just amazing that they really just are struggling to come up with a B-side for Crawford. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, they have Mean Machine, who looked terrible in his last fight. I mean, that was one of those things where it was like, okay, if he can get this win, that'll set him up nicely. Then he looked terrible, arguably lost to Ray Robinson. So then they end up doing the fight anyway. And the thing is, like, after this, where do they go from there? I mean, it just gets worse. I mean, if Mean Machine was their best option, I mean, you know, what happens after that? I mean, there's a whole other thing which, you know, I think we've talked about offline, maybe online a little bit, but, like, this whole thing of, like, how happy is Terrence Crawford at Top Rank, and at what point does he try to break his contract with them or sit it out? I mean, he could stand to make a lot more money on the PBC side of the street in any of these big fights. I mean, his minimum is $3 million. We've heard that many times. This is not a pay-per-view. So, I mean, is he going to want to be making $3 million when there are five or six, I mean, it's crazy to say that, five or six PBC welterweights who are going to make eight figures this year. It's just crazy.
But no one believes that, eh? That's the thing, and that's why you get guys they'll sign with promoters and stick with it, because, you know, boxing's so scummy, and they've heard the promises of money from everyone. So when you start getting paid by one guy, you don't believe it. Like, look how long it took Manny to, like, sort of go free agent. You know, now he's fighting twice in a year. Top Rank had him. Top Rank gave up on him. Like, it's
that's they legitimately it did.
Yeah, they don't believe it because there's so many swindlers saying, oh, you can't get this, and this is the percentage you got to pay. So it's like, it's tough for some fighters to really believe that these other guys are getting paid, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I would just qualify it with, I mean, Terrence Crawford, you think, has a near 100% chance of winning this fight. He's going to make $3 million. You know, that's not nothing. You know, the risk versus reward is pretty good for this fight. So people are still going to say that he's number one or number two welterweight. A lot of people are arguing he's number one. A lot of people are arguing he's number one pound for pound. You know, this isn't, as far as, you know, setback someone can face in their career, this isn't the worst thing in the world. I don't think it diminishes his brand. He's getting paid something. It's not like he's just on the shelf. So it's not horrendous, but yeah, it's clearly a backstep, and it's kind of an embarrassment. I mean, whatever plan Top Rank had about, you know, trying to rope in Errol Spence so aggressively doesn't really seem to have worked. I mean, at least in the short term. I mean, there's still some gamesmanship to come. I mean, the Spence Porter fight hasn't been announced. We don't have a specific date yet. The Crawford
That's
fight
Spence
is only
isn't fighting Porter.
Well, I don't even know where that's going, but
he's fighting Canelo.
Okay, but anyway, look. On that note, we can keep it moving. But
I
yeah,
mean,
I was just
going to
say,
yet,
yeah, the okay. Yeah,
Holy,
no,
Tom doesn't want to hear your.
I know Tom was trying to brush past that because he knows I was about to get him. Look,
I was just going to say, it's like there's still a little bit of brinksmanship. I mean, there could be something where they try to schedule the Mean Machine Terrence Crawford fight somewhere in proximity, maybe even the same night as
the
Spence
fight.
Sort of like contaminate the pay-per-view buys. I mean,
they're not going to counter program.
Oh, yeah, with Ilias Kalamaskas as his opponent. Get out of here with that. I hope they do that because that's the stupidest move ever.
Well, look, Bob. Look at what Bob Arum was saying on the broadcast, and even more than that the next day, where he's like, you know, Spence would never work with a white promoter. He only trusts black people or something crazy like that.
And
you know, meanwhile, Spence is like,
that's kind of true, I think.
The last
that's
four
true.
Fights have been promoted by white promoters,
that's,
you know, Tom Brown and Luda Bella. You know,
no, you know why he's not going to fight for a white promoter? This is a fact. Bob Arum is not lying. He will not fight for a white promoter. You know why? Because Errol Spence promotes his own cards. He's a promoter. Or whoever he puts in, man down.
Which he actually has fighters, unlike some fighters who have promotional companies.
But it's not a bad thing.
It's not merely a tax shelter. He actually does have fighters.
Look, it's real simple, okay? Top Rank is in a battle right now. This is WCW versus WWF all over again. It's Top Rank versus PBC. And you people over there that think Dazen is in this, they're not. They're not even close. They may have Canelo. They may have Golovkin. They may have the battered remains of Anthony Joshua. But they're not in this game. Because ain't nobody watching Dazen. Sorry. That's the facts. Look at how many people were at the Diego De La Hoya fight. I can't even remember who the main event was. Ray Vargas. Nobody was at that fight. You know why? Because they are not a player. Okay? And you know why? You got these guys. They got a bunch of money. They're not even hungry to promote it anymore. Golden Boy just going through the motions. They got this guaranteed money now. They don't even have to go to the network and pitch fights like they had to in the past when they were getting this deal with HBO. Here's the thing. Top Rank's in a battle, and the meta battle going on right now is not Spence and Crawford fighting each other. No one cares about that. What they care about is no one wants their guy's profile to fall behind. Now, you can be behind by a little bit, but you can't be behind by a lot. Because everyone knows, everyone here listening to me talk right now, you all know this fight is going to happen. And if you're one of those people that you're doubtful and you're getting upset about boxing, whatever, that this fight maybe won't happen, settle down. It will happen. Okay? And it'll be just as good as if it happened tomorrow. Now, here's the thing. The real battle is just making sure Crawford's profile doesn't fall too much, because Crawford, they don't care about what happens when the fight happens. They care about what percent they're getting, because everyone's going to eat from that percent. And so Crawford can't fall to 40%. Top rank, that would be a disaster. That would be worse than the fight not happening. That would be worse than Spence bodying Crawford with a straight up KO1. They don't want to hurt their percent. So they got to keep this moving. They got to keep Crawford in the spotlight, continuing to grow his brand, because Spence has Fox and they're doing a phenomenal job at this point. Now, I will say that they're doing a good job over at ESPN with Terrence Crawford as well. And that's fine. Okay. But Crawford, doesn't have the plethora of opponents that Errol Spence does. And now you may look at the fight with Amir Khan. And I think, Tom, you kind of alluded to this, but I'll go a little further. I loved the Amir Khan fight. Now, I didn't enjoy watching it, but the matchmaking, I liked it, because what I saw that as was a low-risk move that ESPN and Top Rank made in order to grow Terrence Crawford and to popularize him. And, like, look, we know because we follow the sport. Maybe, actually, we don't know because we're a little too in it, but, like, Amir Khan's profile just isn't quite what it was. He does not have Jim Lampley blowing him, okay? Amir Khan, however, still carries some cachet with his name, and there's some transfer that they had hoped to achieve in Terrence Crawford beating him. Now, I don't think it paid off. The justification for that is Terrence Crawford's fight with Amir Khan, the numbers weren't announced. That's always a bad sign. Then the other thing is, his next fight's on ESPN. Wonder why. So they're going back to the drawing board. They have to keep building. And I think one of you brought this up about how they're going back to Omaha. They got to get this going again. They got to build up that buzz. Because remember the buzz of fighting in Omaha? All those people from Omaha. You got Warren Buffett sitting in $35 seats. And he's over there complaining that they charged him a service charge. Dude's got worth billions of dollars and complaining about that. They got to keep building him like that way. They got to get that popping crowd so they can put it over on the ESPN broadcast so Joe Tessitore could scream while the fans scream behind him because Terrence Crawford landed a clean punch. And it's all good. It's all good. Don't complain about the matchmaking. Kavalauskas has zero chance. Tom, you said 0% chance. I agree with that. 0% chance of beating Terrence Crawford. But let me ask you this question, guys. I want a real answer. How many PBC guys are going to be favorites over Terrence Crawford?
Where are we going with this? Errol Spence, that's probably it.
There's only one fighter that's going to be a favorite. Now, there might be some closer lines. You know, Mikey Garcia might be like plus 200. It's a joke. Sean Porter maybe has a close line. Thurman maybe has a close line, assuming he beats Pacquiao. Maybe these guys have a closer line with Terrence Crawford. But ultimately, everyone complains that, like, he signed with Top Rank, okay? And that basically took him out of contention from fighting a lot of good fights that people want to see. Granted. But, like, those fights aren't that great. Like, Terrence Crawford's still going to win. I think boxing fans just like the possibility of fighting somebody that's not available. Just like you like the girl that you can't get, okay? That's all that's happening here. But the reality is, some of these fights aren't that interesting. Terrence Crawford is a clear favorite over Danny Garcia. I don't think that's controversial to say. And he's also a clear favorite over Kavalauskas. Now, do I think Danny Garcia is better than Kavalauskas? Yes. Is it a better fight for him to fight Danny Garcia or, you know, one of these other guys similar level to Danny Garcia? Yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm not mad at it because this is, you know, Terrence Crawford signed the deal with Top Rank. He chose to re-sign. Was it a good idea? No. Would I advise him to do it? No, but he did it. And that's what we got to deal with. This is like the reality till 2021, unless these networks see them as valuable enough that they come together and make the fight, which where Terrence Crawford's at right now, ESPN will not do a joint pay-per-view with Fox or Showtime because Terrence Crawford don't got that kind of pull. So you guys want to respond?
Yeah, well, here's the thing is that there's two points with Crawford doing this. As he might want to see the legendary boxing documentary Rocky III, where you know where Rocky's fighting bums, and you know Clever Lang comes along and blows him apart. Because that's Steve Crawford. You know, if you're talking about fighting Errol Spence or Keith Thurman, you know these guys are top, and you're fighting you know Amir Khan, Kovalauskas, and you're waiting, you start to get rusty. Well, these guys are there, you know, they're not taking light fights, you know. Now they're fighting good guys. Like, I think Spence is far better than Porter, you know, but Porter's still a good opponent to be fighting against. You know, Keith Thurman, Manny Pacquiao, those are good, you know, those are good fights. And the fault is too now, these guys are going to get ahead of Crawford. So as they keep doing these things and these sell, because that was a big thing with the media too. They didn't think Garcia and Spence is going to sell, which I don't know why they didn't get that, but they're usually bad at picking up what actually sells. You know, those two guys fighting that fight and doing a lot of buzz, you know, they got the Cowboys behind Spence. Everyone's out here. So right now would be the time to make the fight because it's not too big. But if Crawford or Spence keeps getting bigger, and whoever wins, like if Thurman wins and he's finally, he's going to get this, like his, the heat that he had before he, you know, got injured for a lot. These guys are start getting big. So that percentage you were talking about, that's getting smaller and smaller and smaller on what PBC will have to take because they can fight these other guys. They don't have to, they don't need Crawford. And that's the biggest thing. They don't need Crawford. You know, everyone's talking like this is a fight that has to be made. They don't need him, you know. They've got all these welterweights out there, and they're good welterweights, and they're welterweights that people are interested in seeing them fight. You know, no one's, only people like on the forums are sitting there crying about, oh, Spence Crawford needs to be made. Or the media, who, as you know, as Tom just described, that's a top rank talking point. You know, everyone else is going on and having fun watching boxing. They don't need Terrence Crawford, and that's what gets, the longer he sits around fighting these scrubs, the more he gets minimized. You know, because no one gives a shit about who's on your pound list when guys can make like $500,000 or like they can sell $500,000 buys fighting like Sean Porter. You know, it's not happening.
I mean, for the record, I do want to say that I don't necessarily agree with everything I said, but I was trying to like come up with a response to the Kobe Beans
don't
of the world.
Don't back up now. No,
nah, come on. I just wanted to go anti-Kobe Bean for a sec.
You turned on your boy Kobe Bean, so you're going to get it. So.
He's not my boy. I mean, I hope you're listening because you're hilarious. But no, I mean, I think at its essence, though, I don't care who Terrence Crawford fights because I know we're a long way away from him fighting Errol Spence. And like, that's the fight everyone really wants to see. Now, I would be happy if he fought Danny Garcia. I'd be happy if he fought Keith Thurman. But, you know, that it's just, I'm not going to sit here wasting my energy being mad about fights that aren't going to happen.
I don't really buy that argument either when people say, well, that's the fight everyone wants to see. Well, no one really wants to see Terrence Crawford fight. That's why he's going to be back on on TV fighting in Omaha. Like, the Amir Khan is supposed to be his coming out party, you know, again, after he tried at 140. You know, this is supposed to be putting him on the map, and it's no one really give a shit.
I think Terrence Crawford is a boxing star. But he hasn't crossed over, but I don't think that's possible. I think he pulled in like a $2 million, right, when he fought Jose Benavidez. But the problem is that Terrence Crawford himself isn't bringing those eyeballs in. And I don't think that anything's going to change that. I think Terrence Crawford at his essence is really, doesn't connect with people. And I think it's probably because he doesn't care. And they don't let him be himself. He has to be a certain way when they got the cameras on him. And that really steals any sort of, it takes away all that's actually interesting about him, because you've seen him in videos that he's actually hilarious. He's like, there's a charm about him, but you don't see that when he's just being the nice guy when they interview him after his fights. But go look at him, talk to Errol Spence backstage.
Yeah, it's great stuff. It's got personality, but they can't sell that at all now. They just don't know what to do with them.
Well, because it's also not a premium cable network where you can say bad words.
Tom, anything to add?
No, like, not really.
Only thing I got to add is I'm going to buy this pay-per-view.
I mean, I gave my extended thoughts about it. What I'm interested is just what are the next moves from the top rank side and what's even happening with Terrence Crawford. I mean, he was at I missed him, unfortunately, at Press Row. He buzzed by the big wigs, as I talked about on the big guys on Press Row. I was eating dinner while that was happening, unfortunately. He hasn't been too loud in the media that I'm aware of. I mean, has he had much of a presence on these top rank cards? I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to see how they're going to play the next move. It's just it starts to be a bad look if Spence is making over $10 million fighting Porter and he's making $3 million to fight Mean Machine. You know, it's like just the messaging of that is really bad. And again, it's just like it's so weird that Bob Arum was so aggressive in pushing the Spence thing earlier this year. I mean, I don't know if they just thought they'd be even worse off if they and, you know, as far as just drifting into obscurity, if they didn't do that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're just trying to give fuel to fanboys who they
It's a bit of the Pacquiao pattern, you know. You got to mention them with Mayweather all the time. So they, you know, they've done this before.
Yeah. So maybe as long as Spence keeps building his popularity, Crawford just get lumps along because the fanboys always bring him up, and so there's just that association. You know, I think a lot of Pacquiao's popularity that it was connected to Mayweather.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's still. I mean. Pacquiao had his wacky career where he fought Timothy Bradley so many times and stuff like that. But I mean, he's still at that time when they started the Mayweather Pacquiao negotiations, like he fought Cotto and, you know, beat Floyd's pay-per-view number from that year when he fought Marquez.
Coming off the De La Hoya fight, though.
Yeah, but the point is, like, Pacquiao was surging and did have a credible case. I mean, they were negotiating from some extent. From a position of strength, or at the very least a position of parity. I mean, that's not the case here at all. I mean, look, when Crawford is making $3 million and Spence is making over $10 million, it, you know, looks a little silly for him to be asking for a 50-50 split.
I mean, I think we're all in agreement here that that's not a, well, Tom, you may have a better understanding of, you know, business stuff, but I'm pretty sure we're all Spence is the clear A side here.
Well, yeah, I mean, is Top Rank going to back off from that? I mean, you know, that was...
No, they will not back off.
Bob Arum pulled that thing where he said, we'll do 40-40, and then, you know, the winner gets...
Oh, God, that always gets brought up. That always gets brought up. Nobody ever does that.
Actually, Fred, you would know better than me, at least. Angelo might know. Is that, are they even legally allowed to do that? Or are there things in like the Ali Act that prevent things like that? I think I've heard that there are things like that in UFC where they get like win bonuses or knockout bonuses. And
okay, yeah, this is a bit different. The only thing that's legal money is the guaranteed purse with the commission.
Yeah.
That's reported, but they don't deal with anything with negotiated like beyond the guarantee. That's all the commission.
Okay. So in the same way they get like the PBC guys get their Heyman check, like they could do some sort of
They can do, and even under some of the sanctioning bodies, they have like 10% for the winner. So that can be done, but Bob's just talking nonsense. Like that's the thing on that.
Yeah, that's never gonna happen.
That is. Anytime a promoter brings that up, that's really just a red flag that you could stop listening to them.
No one's going to do business with Bob Arum and let him have the, you know, count over the figures and being able to apply where the 20% is coming from. So that's the thing
right
there.
Right.
But it can be done. The weird thing about the UFC is that that's actually in there. They have variable guarantee reporting, but that's because they're not regulated. So.
Well, aren't those considered bonuses?
I'm not sure how they actually do it, but that's kind of, it gets reported that, because this is the thing, the reporters, you don't know if they're reporting, but I think that comes from the commission, actually, the win show stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you can't do win show in boxing.
Well, damn, if only there was a law regulating that stuff in the UFC.
If only.
Let's move on. Kovalev is going to fight Anthony Yard in Russia. Does anyone care?
No.
Tom?
Look, I've gone on record saying I don't think Yard is that good. But credit to him if he takes the fight. He takes some balls to go to Russia. I don't know. Some shady shit.
I don't know
about
his balls, but, you know, Yard. All right.
I mean, it didn't work out too well for Brandt to go to Japan this week. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if Yard comes away with a win, I mean, that's a pretty big win. I mean, it's also like as we've widely discussed, like the Top Rank. They have a lot of great guys at 175. There are potentially a bunch of really good fights that can happen there. But none of those fights really draw huge money. The biggest intrigue is if something ends up happening with Canelo taking a crazy, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about that before. If, you know, he decides to take like a crazy fight moving all the way up to 175. But outside of that, there's not a huge amount of money at 175 right now. So it's sort of, you know, gets into playing small ball. That's the thing. It's like if Yard wins, I think most people consider it being more about Kovalev being shot than Yard's win. And I don't know, does he become a big draw in the UK? Maybe. I mean, no one in the US is even going to know who he is. I can't even imagine what time zone this is going to be on if it's in Russia. I mean,
it's in Russian time zone, probably.
Yeah, it's like where Gleb lives at Kattenburg standard time or something. You know, I don't know what that translates to the US time zones, but it's not
okay,
really going to help.
No one cares.
It's like at 10:30 a.m. Well, I think it's a valid point.
No,
it's
the fight
like
will come on at noon for me.
Yeah.
Russian, okay. The Russian main events usually come on for me around noon, 12:30.
Right, and if it's like on a weekday, it's like it's yeah.
Well, yeah. This is a fight where like if it's going to Russia, it's like does ESPN even care at this point because they still have thing rights on.
They have all these MTK garbage fights. Of course, they're going to care. They don't buy anything. And if they don't, UFC Fight Pass will be there.
I guess true.
The IBF reportedly ordered Canelo to fight Sergey Derevyanchenko. You guys think it's likely that Canelo may not fight Derevyanchenko?
Well, if he's ordered, I'm pretty sure. But I don't know. They don't have much time. They got 9 weeks left, and they haven't announced an opponent. So, you know, this fight's not going to sell worth a crap. And like you're talking earlier, Canelo versus Jacobs was only an $8.5 million gate, and Manny's was a $6 million gate against Broner. So this is the thing, like what is going on with Golden Boy? Because you know Eddie Hearn is vulnerable in the Dazen deal now. You know, AJ getting blown out is his big hook, and he's got nothing else on there that anyone really cares about, you know, except for Ted Cheeseman, of course, you know, biggest draw in boxing. But that's so for Golden Boy to be slipping this bad, but they did this last year with
the rematch.
Yeah. Again, they let it sit. They let it sit. And it didn't like it sold really good, but not as much as before with no competition. Like there's no competition for that fight, you know? And so that's what you're going to get now. It's like, well, what are they going to do? Like, do they think they're being smart if they announce Golovkin again or something? Or it's just, God, find someone on the fight.
Yeah,
because this thing, Boy, at this point, why not take Derevyanchenko, you know?
Look, I want is for Canelo to do a version of, like, the decision. You know, I mean, he's got, and then announce the Derevyanchenko fight.
Although I already subscribed to Dazen, I'm just going to say this anyway, I would subscribe to Dazen for that, a TV show where Canelo announces. But then knowing Mike Coppinger, he'd spoil
LeBron, his production company makes those dopey specials for DAZN, right?
No, they made one, I believe. One.
Oh, that's right. They had like, was it Meek Mill? Someone else did.
I don't know if their deal is like a long-term one, but.
I don't know if Maverick Carter produces all of that or, I can't stand top of the shoulder
this
program.
This is one of these Mike Coppinger things where it's like he's just throwing out so many things because he's trying to get people to sign up to the Athletic. So, I don't know. I'll start believing these when they come true again, just like the Kovalev fight. You know, I'll really worry about it if it happens, and it didn't. So,
yeah, that's and by the way, I mean, the fights that are being thrown out are good fights. So if they happen, I'll watch them. I mean, speaking of Canelo's potential opponents, you know, if he ends up fighting a garbage opponent, less so, you know, but yeah, I'm not as invested in it. You know, it's like there's this whole drama about who he's going to fight. And I feel like it hasn't really worked that well. I haven't seen, you know, there's been announcements every time like Coppinger drops like a fake sort of, not fake, but you know,
no, that's
someone's
me.
Saying something.
That's me on my account. But,
yeah.
Yeah, but I think people, I think they're really...
I don't
really...
think this is really working that well. I don't really see people really hanging on their every word like maybe
yeah,
they...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, I think they're really misjudging how much people are waiting in bated breath about who's Canelo's going to fight. It's just in terms of the business, of course, no one wants to make a move now. Like, sort of, because everyone's sort of waiting.
It's holding
you're
up
on Wilder.
A lot of...
you're waiting on... Because they don't want to... have to run, even though he's not pay-per-view anymore, they're still they don't want to run into that cross marketing, you know. So he's still got that pull, but he's not like Floyd. He's not like Floyd. He can't play these games where they're like, maybe this, or I'm gonna pretend I'm gonna fight Amir Khan in a Twitter poll.
I mean, you know, that kind of stuff. Floyd's like decisions for who's in a fight was just basically people like arguing and debating for weeks until he made his decision.
It was planned trolling. This with Canelo is just like, it's more frustrating than anything, you know.
Maybe they're waiting for the Dillian White fight to announce it on the card, since so many people will be watching.
Yes.
Yeah, I my last comment on this, it's like, yeah, when you bring up Floyd, I mean, it's like, yeah, Floyd Pacquiao and Floyd McGregor, like, those negotiations were discussed on SportsCenter. That was real, like, you know, that worked. This is just like a bunch of idiots on Twitter being like, wait, was this announced? Because people just trust Coppinger enough. Like, so many people are like, oh, he's fighting Kovalev. And then it's like, oh, he's not fighting Kovalev? You know, it's more led to confusion than really anticipation.
Well, shout out Michael Benson for just taking everything out of context and then tweeting it out like he just made up the news himself. It's like, wait, Coppinger made up that news. Like, what are you doing? You're making up the made-up news? Okay. White Rivas is going to be on DAZN, as I just mentioned right now. I don't think that's news, so we'll move on.
Yes!
Yeah, okay. Fine. You got one fight maybe worth watching this month on
that's worth 4 exclamation points of excitement.
Oh, I get what you're doing. Ha ha ha.
Inside baseball, baby. But yeah, it's like, okay, whatever. It's not like they have real competition for this. No one wanted this fight. So
hey, look, it's an okay fight.
I wanted this fight.
It's not a huge
I mean,
fight,
as like, outlets. Watch it. It's good. I mean, for the outlets. The fight, so yeah, you're going
to
watch it.
For the outlets, tried to bid on this. I was going to stream it on my Twitter, and they did not.
Well, we could have put it on Twitch.
No, I was going to literally put it on my Twitter account, like stream live.
Probably get that ad revenue. Come on, man.
Okay, you know, seriously, capitalist. I feel like I need to bid on one of these, like, you know, flyweight cards that has like a $20,000 purse bid at some point. Like, I feel like it would be fun just to go through the
exercise. Yeah, because you're the only guy with $20,000 to lose.
Tom
don't care about $20,000. That's what he just announced.
I know.
Say I was going to get like I was going to outbid like the Russians for a Povetkin fight. You know, I'm aiming low here, but I just think it'd be fun. I'll put it on my backyard.
It's going to be funny because your competition is going to be Manny Pacquiao Promotions. I hope somebody gets the reference. Anyway, we'll move on before Tom, you know, makes us feel inferior again about the amount of money in our bank accounts. Wilder versus Ortiz 2 is likely now going to be pushed to November. Originally, we thought it would be late September, but Wilder Ortiz 2 is going to happen more likely in November. Do you know why that would be happening, guys?
I don't know. It's a rhetorical question. I mean, I'm assuming because of sports cross promotion, whether it's with Showtime/CBS or Fox, that would seem to make sense to me.
I was going to say that because I think they believe Spence Porter is going to be September. And I think that's the announcement we're going to get, you know, this Saturday is they're going to announce Spence Porter on the Pacquiao Thurman undercard. Obviously, I think that's super like telegraphed, but also makes a lot of sense. Like, it's just like too much sense it makes, actually.
Right, and they've indicated as much. They're expecting, you know, it's one Fox pay-per-view, announced the next Fox pay-per-view. It just makes too much sense. You have both Spence and Porter involved in the pay-per-view broadcast. You know, it's like people have already bought that pay-per-view. You immediately start moving to the next one. You know, that's where it gets so tricky with the Canelo thing, because they don't want to end up getting, you know, their paths crossed there. But at the same time, it's like Canelo's getting so close to the wire here. It's like someone's got to announce something. Fred, were you saying something?
Not really, but like I said, it might seem a little bit hypocritical as we were just blasting Canelo for not announcing this, but Spence Porter, everyone knows that fight was happening. So if they put it in September, even though that is kind of, they'll have like what, it's 11 weeks or something, 11, 12 weeks to sell it, which is, you know, that's, it's right on the edge of where, you know, you want to push it, but everyone knows this fight's happening, you know, so that's not as tough as selling like with Canelo, because people don't know. The way they're talking, it's like, is the fight even going to happen? Are they going to push it? Are they actually not going to fight in September? You know, so yeah, I don't know. It's good. Hopefully, yeah, I'd like to see Spence Porter get out of the way. You know,
Yeah, I mean, there are other, just say, other contributing things. Like, there's, if it ends up being at the Barclays Center, like, has been rumored. I mean, there have been a bunch of things rumored, but that's one of the things which come up in the rumor. It's like, they've got a show, like, Adam Konecki has a card coming up at the beginning of August there. So they don't, you know, if they announce the Spence card, then suddenly that people aren't going to be interested in the other one. You know, it's,
I
like,
I think Vegas. It's got to be Vegas.
And the Pacquiao Thurman one, it's just, you know, it's just basic marketing. Like, you just want to keep your messaging aligned. You want everyone talking about Thurman Pacquiao. You don't want people to be, you know, people to be like, oh, well, the real champ is Errol Spence and lose interest. You know, you just, you want to have aligned messaging. So yeah, wait until this one's out there and then you announce it. Well, and even regarding Vegas, I mean, if it's in the same venue as one of these other fights, then again, you have like a similar issue if you don't want to make people. I mean, it's just, I don't even, you know, when you said it's hypocritical, I mean, I think it's different things. I mean, the thing with Canelo, we were more commenting that like, their thing of playing this game of, oh, who is he going to fight, seems to have backfired. Like, that just seems to have led to more confusion than anything else. Whereas this, I think it's smart timing, and it's what we expect. I mean, the PBC cards, with the exception really of Spence Garcia, and, well, I guess, you know, they had the Fox up front, you know, it's not that uncommon for these things to get finalized. Like, they might announce like two names in a general horizon, but they usually announce it about this far out. I mean, I think that's very deliberate. I mean, you know, they'll announce the date and the venue. They'll have an opening press conference.
They might not even announce the venue. I don't think they announced the venue originally for Pacquiao Thurman when they signed it. Same with Wilder Fury.
It depends. I think this being this close, you'd think they would want to do it and get the tickets on sale. But, you know,
Pacquiao's fighting in Vegas for the tax benefit there. Man, he's looking to cut his tax bills down as much as he can.
I think, I don't know if Coppinger tweeted this out, but maybe that LA was in consideration for Spence Porter. That'd be interesting.
I can't see it.
I would definitely like to see it.
Well, of course, because you can go right there, but that just doesn't make sense for anything they've done. You know, Porter went up to LA and no one showed up. You know, and Spence has got, they both got a history at Barclays. Spence has got good pull there, and he's also got pull in Texas. You know,
I think they should go back to Texas.
That's what I think it should be, but you never know because there's so much to tie in with, you know, because Jerry Jones, obviously, he loves Spence, you know, and he's all into this. He's wanted to get boxing back before, so having a guy from Texas to promote.
I don't know how this stuff works, though, like if they can do an event like that during the NFL season, if they do it during like an away week or something, you know, I don't know how realistic that is.
They could do it if the Cowboys are away that week. They could definitely do it. I mean, it's just assuming that there's nothing else happening in the venue. But like, we're talking about Cowboy Stadium
before, you know. Yeah.
And I don't think you can do Cowboy Stadium for Spence Porter.
Yeah. I don't know, but you've got that NFL tie-in. I mean, that's another thing we haven't really like with these upcoming, you know, it's like what the Fox deal is going to look like in the fall. I mean, we only got like the tail end of the football season. In terms of doing cross promotion, I mean, if they want to get aggressive to that and they have the whole football season to play with, I mean, that could really bring in some numbers.
Yeah, that's
what I agree. That's the most interesting thing about the whole deal is Fox's cross promotion. And like, we're starting to see it, like they're promoting WWE on during events during baseball season during a baseball game. I was seeing the promotion for the WWE already, and you know, we're still months off from WWE coming to Fox, but they're starting the promotional run already. So, I mean, you guys want to say anything about Pacquiao Thurman? Me and Rollins are going to do a Pacquiao Thurman pod probably within the next couple of days, but I do want to get your takes on the fight and try not to say anything too cool so that you leave us something to talk about.
Yeah, Fred, you want to go first?
I'm looking forward to this fight a lot. I think this will be a good fight because to me, it really is up in the air because we still don't know where Thurman's at, you know.
Okay, Dwyer.
Yeah. Blown apart my take already. No, I think this is a really good matchup. I would have preferred to see Pacquiao Spence because I don't think Thurman deserves a boost from Pacquiao at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because well, the guy's out there playing the didgeridoo for 2 years and he comes back and he gets a Pacquiao fight. Yeah.
But either way, I don't think Manny was going to take that Spence fight either. That's the thing. He didn't want to be fighting Thurman, you know, or Spence, you know. Thurman looks more vulnerable to them because Thurman's he's not sitting down and trying to blow guys out anymore. So I think it'll be interesting. But, you know, like, Manny's getting pretty damn old, you know. But I still think it'll be a good fight. I think it's going to be a good card. It's going to be a good night because they got that lead-in fight with Plant and Lee. I think it's good. Like I said, it's – we're called PBC marks, but Fox is really putting a lot of fun into boxing, and that's what I really like about their cards. They're not uptight. They're not sitting there wearing tuxedos every time. They're having fun there, and they let their guys a lot of leash to run with their opinions, you know, so that's what I like.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fight. I already bought the pay-per-view. I've said this before. When a pay-per-view comes up, I buy it on my cable box, set up the DVR, you know, so I can rewatch it the day after. And just really looking forward to it. The main event, like we've said, I mean, it's who would have thought that, you know, it's like you would think that Pacquiao in a matchup like this, just saying over the last few years, if he was going to fight any of the up-and-coming guys, I mean, you know, this has been looming. Thurman's been on the scene for 5 years. Spence had been coming up. Crawford had been coming up. That if Pacquiao fought any of them, it would be this like cynical promotion where he was, you know, an underdog. He was getting cashed in. And he's the betting favorite as of right now, which is crazy. And, you know, that for me is so much fun posting highlight clips because it's like I'm laying out the whole greatest hits of the Pacquiao stuff. You know, there's no hashtag Novada. I mean, I know Fred addressed that, you know, it's sort of I think you talked about that in one of the drug testing conversations. Yeah, but yeah, it's a little bit silly, but, you know, it's funny. So, I mean, you're really seeing some heat. You know, it's like Pacquiao is a global icon, and there are a lot of people who just think, oh, he's going to go in there and beat Thurman. I mean, he's, you know, this is not a thing where like Pacquiao fans are afraid to watch it because they think their hero is going to lose. Like, they're like, they're, you know, looking forward to watching their hero get another, you know, legacy defining win against the young, hungry lion and Keith Thurman. So, I mean, I just love the energy of the promotion that way. From the Thurman side, though, it's like it does feel a little weird because people are saying Thurman's going to lose it. You know, I've continually made the comparison to Miguel Cotto, Sergio Martinez, where it kind of feels like if Pacquiao wins, it's just going to be because like Keith Thurman's body was not cooperating and he can't do what he used to be able to do. You know,
Thurman was never as bad as Sergio Martinez.
But
you're right. It shouldn't be this exciting. Like, it really shouldn't be that a 40-year-old Pacquiao,
right? If a guy is,
it's not like he's Mayweather with these, you know,
like, that shouldn't be the point of excitement in a fight.
Yeah, right? It's not like he's Mayweather or Hopkins that could rely on a lot of tricks and slickness. You know, Manny's pretty much jumps in and tries to pop your head off and everything. So Thurman should take him, but that's it. Thurman talks like a shot fighter half the time. You know, he's really braggadocious, but then on the other point, he's talking like a dude. He's talking like Ricky Hatton used to talk, you know, like he's thinking about killing himself or something, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. So yeah, it really, I don't know. I'm excited for this, and I don't really know why.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I'll just say related to that. Yeah, it's like, you know, I think Pacquiao is getting probably too much credit for the Broner win. Yeah, it's like when you bring the magnifying glass to it, it does. You know, you can really see the seams, but I'm still really excited about it. And then just to address as well the undercard, because I love the undercard. I mean, the two fights, Yordanis Ugas versus Omar Figueroa Jr. and Sergey Lipinets against John Molina. You have two guys who are kind of like hard luck underdog type guys. Like Sergey Lipinets was very good, fought Mikey Garcia very early on in terms of the number of fights he had in his career. Retired Lamont Peterson in a very exciting fight in his last fight, and a win over John Molina has huge upside for him. So I love that. And Ugas, similar type of matchup against Omar Figueroa, where Figueroa is undefeated, has really overstayed his welcome, I think, in a lot of people's minds. He's had a lot of fights fall out, still undefeated somehow. And I think it's great that Ugas, you know, who had some bad luck with the Porter decision, a lot of people thought, I scored it for Porter narrowly, but, you know, it was at least a very close fight. So it's pretty cool that he's getting that fight. And, you know, with a win, taking Omar Figueroa's O, that's going to give great highlight reel footage. I mean, that could really boost Ugas to get a fight with one of the top guys, or at least be one step below that to maybe fight one of the losers of one of these pay-per-views. I mean, Ugas is being positioned for another major fight. Luis Neri, very exciting fighter, won Carlos Payano. It's sort of weird because Payano looked very good on paper until Inoue knocked him out in one punch. But, you know, Luis Neri is, you know, if not number one, number two at bantamweight. So that's a fun.
Has Payano ever looked good in anything? Like, I think that was, I think we know what's going to happen with that one. I think Neri's going to take his head off.
Payano, he had been a durable guy. I mean, he had a series of fights with Rashi Warren, which were pretty entertaining. And,
yeah, but I don't think Payano has ever lifted his hands above his shoulders. So
that was his only loss. It's a majority decision in that fight. So, yeah. I mean, you know, he's beaten some undefeated fighters. You know, he had a pretty respectable record. And then, yeah, Inoue just, you know, that's one of those things where you're like, is Inoue a superhero, or is there like something we didn't know going on with Payano? Like,
he doesn't want to defend his head. That's just Payano's fault. No, it'll be a good fight. But
there's intrigue there. Caleb Plant, you know, I think earned a huge amount of fans with his fight with Jose Uzcategui, fighting Mike Lee, who is absolutely being led to a slaughter. The media conference call for that fight was absolutely hilarious because the boxing writers did not care to show Mike Lee any respect. We're basically just kind of goofing on him along with Caleb Plant, kind of like, yeah, this guy, you know, there is a weird kind of babyface heel element where Mike Lee on the surface would be the babyface, but people just sort of reject him as this like college graduate who shouldn't be in the sport. So it just seems like everyone's looking forward to Plant knocking him out. And then last but certainly not least, F.A. Jacoba, who I've said is one of my very favorite prospects. He's always bombing people out. He has incredibly long arms, just huge jack guy who knocks people out. And they found an undefeated opponent for him to go in with. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that too. I mean, it's a tight, tight card. I mean, there are only six listed fights on the card. We're so used to these like 14, 15 fight PBC marathons.
I think Pacquiao has some guys on the undercard.
Oh, okay. So there's going to be, that makes sense. So when we actually get the bout sheet, it's going to be longer than this. But I mean, as far as what's shown in BoxRec, I mean, you have just six every one of those fights is interesting to me. I mean, those are not, you know, fights where I'm going to be getting up to, you know, go pick up some beer. You know, those are all interesting fights to me, a varying level of interest. I mean, Babs was complaining to me.
No one cares.
Well, just very quickly, some of these might have wide betting odds, but they're all interesting. You know, that's not to say these are necessarily 50-50 fights, but they're all interesting.
There would be very few fights to care about if all you looked at was the betting odds.
Yeah, betting odds are just what people are betting on. Like, everyone thinks that's some kind of indicator of who they think is going to win. That's the jabronis betting. You know, they put a line out to get action both sides, and they don't care who wins. You know, Vegas isn't picking winners.
Yeah, that is a good point. Anyway, you said to be fast and to leave it for you and Rollins, and I spoke for like 7 minutes uninterrupted.
Well, no one really listened to your shill job, but yeah, I'm actually going to bring this back and get people interested. Let me ask you this question, Tom. What are your thoughts on Keith Thurman saying that the moon landing did not happen?
Oh my god, I laughed at that. It was fun. By the way, I'll just drop this to get to ask Keith Thurman some questions on the media conference call. I mean, I enjoy Keith Thurman as a personality in the sport. I don't know if I should be that surprised he did some moon landings fake, but I'll sort of hijack that question a bit. I know you're just giving a gag, but
no, I just don't want to believe the truth.
It's so fun either way. If Pacquiao wins this fight and fights Spence, can you imagine how big of a fight that's going to be? I mean, that is a Sports Center has to cover it type of fight. If Thurman wins, you know, especially if he looks really good and dominates Pacquiao, he reclaims a lot of what he had lost in his time off. And if he fights Spence, you have two undefeated champions facing off in a unification fight. I mean, again, just an amazing fight. I mean, that's what's so crazy about all these PBC fights. I mean, there are a lot of, like, think of when, like, Ward fought Kovalev. there's nothing for Ward to do after he fought Kovalev and he retired. You know, okay, they did the fight twice, then he retired. Like, there are years of good fights for the PBC to put on at 147.
Tom, you're repeating a point we already made. PBC's deep anyway, at welterweight. We're two hours in. You don't need to repeat
but
this.
Yeah, noted. Keith Thurman, moon landing fake. It's hilarious.
Real question is, we did it once, and it's 50 years later, and we haven't done it again. When they asked Obama about it, they said the technology didn't exist, as if it's lost technology. As if 45 years ago, we built the pyramids and we can't refigure it out. Come on. The technology doesn't exist because it never existed. That's how we got to end today. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Please rate and review. I mean, guys, is this shocking that Keith Thurman said that? Like, you know, what's he been doing the past 2 years?
But that's what I said. That's why he talks like such a weirdo. That's why he think Manny
Keith
might just
Thurman,
take this guy's head
if,
off.
If you can hear me, it's not impossible to go to the moon. It's just very expensive. They had to build entire factories just to build, get enough hydrogen to fill
even
up the
Tom couldn't afford that.
It's like, please, Keith Thurman. Just like, okay, Saturn rockets are the size of a skyscraper. Saturn V rockets are the size of a skyscraper. It's just expensive. It's not impossible. The end.
Damn, smoking Tom, mirrors, man. Way too much thought into that. All right, guys, thank you for listening. Rate and review, do all that stuff, and look forward to another podcast.
Wow. Well, I thought I was